Gillette's Cavalcade of Sports is on the air. From Wrigley Field in Chicago, Gillette presents the World Series. Men, look sharp, feel sharp, be sharp. Use Gillette Blue Blades with the sharpest edges ever honed. Good afternoon, baseball fans everywhere. This is Al Helfer with Bill Slater and Bill Corum, greeting you for the Gillette Safety Razor Company as the Chicago Cubs and the Detroit Tigers get ready for the crucial sixth game in this 1945 championship series. The sun here in Chicago at Wrigley Field is shining beautifully. In other words, we have a brilliant sun. But the temperature, well, it has considerably dropped during the night. And the official reading at 1 o'clock here this afternoon was exactly 48 degrees. First of all, I think we have the opportunity, perhaps, of running down the Tigers' batting order before the national anthem is sung. At shortstop and leading off is Skeeter Webb for Detroit. Hitting second is Eddie Mayo, the second baseman. Hitting third is Roger Doc Comer in center field. Hitting fourth is Hank Greenberg, playing in left field. Hitting fifth is Roy Cullenbine, the right fielder. Hitting sixth is Rudy York, the big first baseman. Hitting seventh is Jimmy Outlaw, the little third baseman. Hitting eighth is Paul Richards, the catcher, and the pitcher is Virgil Trux. And for the Chicago Cubs, Stanley Hack will lead off and play at third. Don Johnson will be the second baseman and hit second. Peanuts Lowry will hit third and be in left field. And Phil Cavaretta will be at first and hit fourth for Chicago. Hitting fifth will be Andy Pathko, and he'll play in center field. Hitting sixth will be Big Bill Nicholson, and he'll be playing in right field again for Chicago today. The catcher is going to be Mickey Livingston, hitting in the number seven spot for Charlie Grimm's Cubs. And hitting in the number eight spot and reinstalled into the lineup, as Bill Corum told you, is Roy Hughes, the veteran shortstop. And hitting ninth and pitching this afternoon, and Chicago's pinning their hopes on him, Claude Passeau, grand right-hander, 36 years of age, and he'll be facing Virgil Trux, a 26-year-older. So there's just 10 years difference between these two pitchers here this afternoon. Claude Passeau, as Bill Corum told you, has pitched the more nearly perfect ball game in the World Series. And Virgil Trux, just out of the Navy, as a matter of fact, this is his second week out of service, and he has come back to baseball with a bang. If you recall, he pitched himself quite a smart ball game against these self-same Chicago Cubs down in Detroit. And Steve O'Neill is hoping that this afternoon the latter portion of his TNT offering will come to light. Now here are the Chicago Cubs coming out to take the field. We'll set them for you defensively. Claude Passeau on the mound. Livingston behind the plate. But ladies and gentlemen, right now we are to have the playing of our national anthem. Of this sixth World Series ball game, but we have just a few moments' time, as a matter of fact, 10 seconds worth of it for station identification. Remember, men, look sharp, feel sharp, be sharp. Use Gillette Blue Blades with the sharpest edges ever honed. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
WGN Chicago, serving the Middle West.
As Claude Passeau now goes to the mound here at Wrigley Field in Chicago, the umpires behind the plate, National League Lou Jorda. At first base, American League Art Passarella. At second base, National League umpire Jocko Conlon. At third base is Bill Summers of the American League. And talking about Bills,
Well, you know what that means, don't you? That means our grand guy is going to step up here to the microphone right now. He takes his hat off, shows us that silver hair of his, moves into the microphone, and he tells us the following. Bill?
Okay, Al Helfer, thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. This ball game, as Al indicated, is just about to get itself underway. Claude Pessot, defiantly wearing a big number 13 on his back, strides out to the mound there, picks up the rosin bag, and Claude is walking nervously around that circle of dirt out there at this particular moment and is getting ready to deliver the first pitch of this sixth crucial ball game in the 45 series to Jimmy Skeeter Webb, the leadoff hitter for Detroit. That will bring up there, battling each other, a couple of gentlemen from Mississippi. Pessot from Waynesboro, Mississippi. The pitcher will face Jimmy Webb of Meridian, Mississippi, as the hitter. Now Webb bats right-handed, steps in there. In the series, he's had four hits out of 21 times up, and when he faced Pessot last Friday, he grounded out twice and he flied out once. Only one man got a hit off of Pessot, and that was Rudy York. So Skeeter Webb was not an exception in the lineup in not hitting Pessot last Friday. He's ready to go now. Pessot delivers him. It's a call strike, a fastball on the inside just above the knees. And Pessot, on that pitch, takes up where he left off on Friday with that magnificent exhibition of his. Claude, with that sharply chiseled chin of his, very determined face, big guy, pitches down to little Skeeter. Webb swings on it. There's a ground ball down to second. Don Johnson has it. The throw to Cabaretta in time. Webb is out. Webb grounding out to the second baseman of the Chicago Cubs, and it's one out for Detroit in the top of the first inning. Here's Eddie Mayo of Clifton, New Jersey. Mayo has had four hits in the series and 17 times up, and oddly enough, he's gotten all of his hits off of Hank Baroli. He hasn't hit anybody else. He grounded out three times last Friday against Pessot. Mayo bats left-handed, and he's ready to go. So is Pessot, and here comes the pitch. He runs up as if to bunt, takes it, and it's good for a called strike. This is the second series that Eddie Mayo's been in, as we've commented before. He was in the 36th series as a Giant. He was a substitute then to Travis Jackson. Came up only once at bat in that series and walked off with a little over $4,000. There's a fly ball going into right field. Back goes Nicholson. He's back pretty close to the wall, but he's under it and takes it for the out. So Mayo flies out to deep right field to bat Bill Nicholson, and there are two out for Detroit in the top of the first. Here comes Doc Kramer. Kramer has six hits out of 18 times up in the series. And against Pessot on last Friday, he flied out to each of the three outfielders. Flied out to left, flied out to center, flied out to right. So he played no favorites on flying out. The pitch to the left-handed hitter is swung on. There's a slow roller down to second. Don Johnson feels it. It'll be close, but Kramer is out. So quickly, the Tigers go down in order in the top of the first inning, and there's nothing across for Detroit. Therefore, the score is Detroit nothing, Chicago nothing. Experience quickly teaches a good moundsman the best way to pitch to a batter who is really tough. Yes, just as experience teaches men that the best way to shave is the quick, easy, all Gillette way. Now, take it from me, when you soften your whiskers with Gillette shaving cream, lather or brushless, and breathe through them with today's Gillette Blue Blade in your Gillette razor, you enjoy the slickest, most refreshing shaves a man can have. Fans, Gillette Brushless and Gillette Lather are superb beard softeners. They remove moisture-resisting oil from your whiskers almost instantly and blanket plenty of water against them. Every bristle gets a thorough soaking in a hurry. Gillette shaving creams are becoming easier to obtain. Ask your dealer for Gillette Brushless or Gillette Lather, just a quarter, and enjoy the extra luxury of shaving this easier all-Gillette way. And remember, look sharp, feel sharp, be sharp. Use Gillette Blue Blades with the sharpest edges ever honed. Now it's the last half of the first inning, and a roar from the Chicago crowd as Stanley Heck comes to the plate. Heck bats left-handed, and in the series he's gone 7 for 20. And against Trucks last Thursday, he went 3 for 3 and was walked once, and one of his three hits was a double. So this particular fellow, Stanley Heck, who's coming up there to bat against the ex-sailor, Virgil Trucks, was the toughest guy of all over in Detroit for Trucks. Let's see what happens now. Trucks pitches low and outside. It's ball one. Trucks only gave the Cubs seven hits in hanging up that victory over them. up in Detroit. He pitches now inside the hat. That was just above the waist, over the inside corner to the left-handed batter. Ball two, 2-0. Now Hack leans his bat against himself, spits on his hands and rubs them together and grabs the bat again. And Trucks, a husky-looking guy, is ready to go. That's a call strike. Fast curve over the outside corner, just below the waist. 2 balls, 1 strike on the first batter for Chicago. In the last half of the first inning, no score. The pitch swung on, fouled off, strike two. 2 balls, 2 strikes. Don Johnson is on deck. He'll be followed by Peanuts Lowry. Virgil Trucks, who's 6 feet, weighs 195, looks like a collar ad, good-looking guy. Pitchers, Hack swings on it. There's a foul coming back into the stands just behind third. And Charlie Grimm, the inimitable manager of the Chicago Cubs, coaching down at third, looks up at the crowd, and he grins. Now he shouts something down at Hack. And so does Roy Johnson, the old Hard Rock, who coaches at first for the Cubs. And a new ball is all rubbed up and ready to be put in play now. Here it comes. Hack takes it outside. Now it's a full count. 3 balls, 2 strikes on the first batter up for Chicago and the last for the first. Hack standing there with that ever-present California smile on his face. Takes that one. It's inside and Hack is walked. So the first Cub up gets on. The batter now is Don Johnson, the right-handed hitter. Trucks only walked 3 men in that first game. There's a throw over to first, but Hack gets back in time. Johnson's the second baseman. Against Trucks last Thursday, he went 0-for-3 and struck out twice. Trucks' first pitch to him is low and inside for ball one. This guy Trucks, as you've been told, is a Birmingham, Alabama boy. His father was a semi-professional pitcher and started Virgil on his way to baseball fame. Here's the pitch. It's bunted down the first base line. York feels it, bobbles it for a minute. The throw to first is in time, however, with Mayo covering. And Hack moves down to second, and the sacrifice works. York charged down the first base line. Johnson was running right at him. York bobbled it for just a second, but picked it up in time to flip it to Eddie Mayo back at first base for the out. Hack now is perched in potential scoring position at second, and the batter is Peanuts Lowry. He hits right-handed, and he's gone 6-for-20 in the season. And against Trucks last Thursday, he went 2-for-4. Swings on this one. There's a long fly ball to right field. Back goes Roy Cullenbine. He's under it in deep right field. Hack touches up at second, but does not go down to third in the face of a good throw by Roy Cullenbine in from right field. So that's all for Lowry. Hit the first pitch ball to right field for an out. 2 out now for Chicago. Last of the first, and here's their leading hitter stepping up there, Phil Cavaretta. In the series, Phil has had 6 hits out of 17 times up. 2 doubles and a homer in those 6 hits. He got one of those doubles off the Trucks last Thursday when he went 1-for-4 against Virgil. Cavaretta, very popular in Chicago, bats left-handed, takes a long grip on that war club. Big Virgil Trucks on the mound, stretches. Pitches to Cavaretta, who swings on it, slaps it down to deep shortstop. Skeeter Webb is making the play to first, and it's in time. Nice play by Webb. Cavaretta's out of there. And that's all for Chicago in the last half of the first inning. No runs, no hits, a base runner Hack left on at second, and there were no Detroit errors. So that's how this thrilling ball game gets underway, nothing to nothing at the end of the first inning. Here's the first batter for Detroit in the top of the second inning, and it is Captain Hank Greenberg, who served with distinction in the Army Air Forces. Greenberg steps up there. Yesterday, he had a very hot day. He went 3-for-5, and his 3 hits were all doubles. And in the series, he's gone 6-for-16, 3 doubles and a homer. Against Paso, last Friday, he struck out and then twice flied out to left field. Greenberg's batting average is a very fancy 375 in this series. Tall right-handed hitter is Big Hank. Fly to the Bronx. Paso pitches him. It's good. A fast call strike just above the knees over the inside corner. On Friday, Paso pitched the very dangerous Hank Greenberg perfectly all the way. See what happens now today. It's one of the hardest things in baseball to stop Greenberg. Here's the pitch. Greenberg swings on it. There's a high fly ball going into left field. Peanuts Lowry over to his left is under it, and he takes it on the run for the out. The next batter will be Roy Cullenbein. Cullenbein has gone 3-for-16 in the series. Two of them have been very timely doubles. Against Paso last Friday, he flied out twice and grounded out once. Cullenbein, against this right-handed pitching, will hit left-handed. Now Paso calmly looks him over and pitches to him. It's a little high and outside for ball one. Cullenbein's been around, played with Detroit, Brooklyn, the Browns, the Senators, the Yanks, Cleveland, and now back to Detroit again. Paso, pitching with considerable deliberation, is ready. Here's the pitch. Cullenbein swings on it. There's a fly ball going down the left field line. I think it's going to fall foul, and it does. Finally curving over into the crowd, it was sliced. One ball, one strike. And Cullenbein, with his hands nipped a bit by the stiff breeze that's whipping across Lake Michigan, blows his breath on his hands before he grips that bat again. It really is that cold. Paso is blowing his breath on his pitching hand. Now he goes into his motion. Delivers. Cullenbein takes it low and inside. Ball two. Two balls, one strike. One out in the top of the second inning. Nobody on. Nothing to nothing to score. Paso has fingers constricted on his left hand, which is the reason he's allowed to rub up the ball with his gloved hand. Pitches to Cullenbein, and it's a foul strike just above the knees, beautifully curved on the inside corner. That was a masterful pitch. Two balls, two strikes now on big Roy Cullenbein. Cullenbein is standing outside the batter's box now. Now he steps in. And Paso, who does a lot of fiddling around on the mound, blows his breath on his hands, pulls on his cap, is ready to go. 2-2 pitch coming into Cullenbein high for ball three. Now there's a 3-2 situation. And that ball was so high that it bounced off the top of the glove of Mickey Livingston and rolled back to the screen. Outfield plays Cullenbein very deep and right, and with respectful distance in the other outfield positions. And the shortstop, Roy Hughes, is back at the edge of the grass, the outer edge. So is the second baseman, Don Johnson. Cullenbein steps in, then steps out again, goes back, says he wants the rosin bag. This is a 3-2 pitch. Back there, he says a few words to Rudy York, who's on deck. Most of the Tigers are wearing very heavy black undershirts under their baseball shirts today. Now, Paso works. It's low and outside, and he walks Cullenbein. That's the first walk given up by Paso. He only walked one man, all told, in that very masterful game that he pitched last Friday. Next batter is Rudy York. York hits right-handed, and as we told you, he's the only man that got a hit off Paso up in Detroit. Just as in that last one-hit game that was pitched back in 1906 by a Cub pitcher in the World Series, the only man to hit him was the opposing first baseman. Odd coincidence. York bats right-handed. Swings on that one, swaps it out to center field. It's falling in for a good hit. It's midway between the right and center fielders. It's being fielded out there by Papko. And the throw in the second is not in time to get York, who is sliding in with a double. And Cullenbein holds up a third. That, of course, is just the second hit that has been gotten off of Paso in the World Series. Both hits up to this point have been garnered by Rudy York. And this is the first extra base blow off Mr. Paso, and it puts a pretty tough situation up to the Cubs, because Cullenbein is at third, York is at second, with that double to right center field. And now here is Jimmy Outlaw, the little third baseman. I think they're going to intentionally pass him, yes. That would be the indicated strategy. So out from behind the plate steps catcher Mickey Livingston on orders from Jolly Charlie Grimm. And Paso will go through the perfunctory motions of tossing in three wide ones. And that means that Outlaw will be intentionally passed and put on. That fills up the bases, of course, enhancing the opportunity for a double play. There's ball four, and there goes Outlaw. And now all the pressure, as far as the Tigers are concerned here in the top of the second, is placed squarely on the shoulders of Paul Richards, the catcher, the tall, dark-haired gentleman from Texas. Richards steps in there, batting right-handed. He's gone 2-for-15 in the series and driven in one run. He only batted once against Paso last Friday. Fouled out to the first baseman then. Here's the pitch to Richards, high, ball one. Bases loaded, full of Tigers. Cullenbein at third, York with his double at second, and Outlaw purposely passed as at first. There's one out. Paso pitching to Richards in the clutch. Here it comes. Richards swings, misses. It's a strike. One ball, one strike. And this is the first high moment in this ball game. This is the sort of thing you come for. Some activity in the Cub bullpen. Pick that up for you in a second because Paso is just ready to go now to Richards. Richards lets it go. It's down low. Below the knees. Ball two. That's Hank Wise. Chap who was part Cherokee Indian down there warming up. Cub right-hander is Mr. Wise. But the interest is all focused now on the Cub right-hander on the mound, the veteran Claude Paso. Count on the batter is 2-1. Here it comes. Richard swings, misses it. Just foul tipped it. Dropped out of the glove of Mickey Livingston, but that is strike two. 2-2. And Trucks, the pitcher, is scheduled to hit next. Now Claude Paso in a tough spot. Works very slowly, very carefully. He'll put all the cunning and craftiness of his long years of experience and his ability as a great pitcher into this next one coming in there to Richards. Here it is. Richards takes it high. Now it's ball three. 3-2. And you can hear the roar of the crowd rising in the background. And a couple of new balls are brought out and given to the plate umpire, Lou Jorda. 3-2. One man out. Paso taking all the time in the world, and he sure deserves it. Is ready. Here it comes. Richards takes it, and it is high for ball four, and a run is forced in. The Tigers go ahead 1-0. That, of course, will count as a run batted in for Mr. Richards, his second of the series, and Cullenbein crossed with the free run that was forced in when Richards was walked. That moved York down to third, put Outlaw on at second, Richards at first, of course. Keeps the bases loaded, and the Tigers are in front 1-0. And it was Cullenbein, incidentally, who crossed with a run that was forced in yesterday. Now, here's Virgil Crux, the pitcher, coming up to hit. He's the sixth man up for Detroit here in the top of the second inning. Crux bats right-handed. Not too fancy a hitter. He hasn't had time to get his hitting eye back since he came out of the Navy less than 10 days ago. Swings on one. There's a bounding ball foul outside of third base. Fielded by Steve O'Neill. Crux, on the game he pitched last Thursday, went 0-for-3, struck out once. He's a right-handed batter as this fireball from Alabama. A great big 35 on his back. Here's the pitch to him. He swings on it. There's a short fly ball going down the left field line. Back on the grass and under it is Roy Hughes, and he takes it for the out. Races the ball back into the infield and all runners hold. That means York is still at third, Outlaw at second, Richards at first. Two out now, one run in the top of the second. And that brings up Skeeter Webb to start the second batting around for the Detroit Tigers here in this crucial sixth game of the 1945 World Series. Webb batting right-handed. He went to the University of Mississippi when he was a kid, and the opposing moundsman out there, Claude Paso, went to Millsaps College down in Mississippi. So a couple of old Mississippi collegians going at it again. All those things are forgotten. Webb would like to get a hit, and Paso would like to put him out. Here it comes to Webb. Webb swings on it. There's a bounding ball back towards second. It's fielded by Hughes, who steps on second for the force out, retiring the side. Hughes stepped on second, forcing out Richards, unassisted, coming down from first. So in the top of the second inning, for Detroit, one run, One hit, three men left on, and there were no cover errors. Now Art Flynn of Sporting News has just brought Rogers Hornsby, greatest right-handed hitter of all time, into the booth. Come in and say a word to the fans, Roger.
Hello, fans. I'm getting a real kick out of this series. I hope you are, too.
Roger, you look sharp.
I bet you feel sharp,
don't you, boy?
I do, Bill.
Right. Well, all the fans know that you are sharp, Roger, so tell them how you shave.
You tell them, Bill.
Well, okay, Roger, then I'll take the ball. We both know that you always use the Gillette Blue Blade. And believe me, it's the sharp choice. As you found out, and that goes for most top ball players I know, the Gillette Blue Blade is the easiest and smoothest shaving blade that any man ever laid against his face. Remember, fans, look sharp, feel sharp, be sharp. Use Gillette Blue Blades with the sharpest edges ever honed. All right, the last half of the second inning. And the embattled Chicago Cubs will be stepping up there. Detroit leads them by one run. And Virgil Trucks on the mound, who enjoys that one-run lead, is getting ready to pitch to Andy Pafko. Swings on one, hits it right back through the box and out into center field for a hit. It's fielded out there by Doc Kramer, and Pafko, pressing halfway down to second, turns around in the face of Kramer's throw and gets back to first with a single. That's the first hit of this ball game off Trucks, of course, and the eighth hit gathered off of his deliveries in the series. And here is Bill Nicholson at the plate. Left-handed hitter. Swings on the first one. There's a high one down the first base line in foul territory now, and York is over under it, and York takes it for the out. Nicholson fouls out the first baseman of Detroit, Rudy York. Pafko at first. Here comes Mickey Livingston, the catcher. He bats right-handed. He didn't bat against Trucks over in Detroit. Gillespie caught that ball game. And Gillespie was hurt in that game and hasn't been in the series since. Mickey Livingston, the former GI, bats right-handed. Takes a high pitch from Virgil Trucks for ball one. Livingston's had 5 hits out of 15 times up in the series, 2 of them doubles. Batted in 3 runs. Right-handed hitter. Here it is. He took it. Was good. A called strike. He started for it, checked his swing, and it nipped the inside corner. One ball, one strike now on Mickey Livingston. Andy Pafko leading off first. York holding the corner against him. Here's the pitch. Livingston swings on it, hits it down to the second baseman, Mayo. The play at second, one out. The play back to first is very wide. The ball bounces off the wall there. The runner is going into second. He slides in, and he's out. Here's what happened. Livingston hit a ball down to the second baseman, Eddie Mayo. He picked it up, threw it to the shortstop, Skeeter Webb, covering at second. That forced Pafko coming down. The throw to York at first was very wide, but it bounced hard off the wall. And Richards, going down toward first, the catcher picked it up, flipped it down to Webb, who was still at second base, and Webb put the ball on Livingston as Livingston slid in, and so Livingston was out, and that is all for Chicago in the last half of the second inning. No runs for the Cubs, 1 hit, no base runners left on, and there were no errors by Detroit. At the end of 2 full innings of play, Detroit leads Chicago by a score of 1-0. And now before we move into the thrilling third inning that I know is coming up, let's do a little pause here, 10 seconds for station identification. Remember, men, look sharp, feel sharp, be sharp. Use Gillette Blue Blades with the sharpest edges ever honed. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
This is WGN Chicago, serving the Middle West.
Of course, that play a moment ago, when Livingston was thrown out trying to get himself into second after the throw to York had been wide, will be racked up as a double play, because there was a twin killing on the same play. And that's the first double play of this ball game. Detroit leading 1-0. It's Eddie Mayo, who was involved in that play, who comes up to bat. This is his second time up. First time up, he lifted a fly out to Bill Nicholson in right field. He hits left-handed. Swings on one. There's a ground ball to the left of the second baseman. Johnson has it now. The throw to first is in time to get Mayo. He's out.
Second baseman Don Johnson throwing over to Phil Cabaretta. So that's one out for Detroit in the top of the third inning. Now here's Doc Kramer to be the next hitter. He grounded out to Johnson his first time up. Doc bats left-handed. He's the only player in the major leagues that ever caught a foul that I know of in center field. That foul, however, was a rooster that he caught out here at Comiskey Park once this season. So that's how Kramer caught a foul in center field. First pitch to him is in there for a called strike on Roger Doc Kramer. Kramer has 6 hits out of 19 times up in the series so far. Swings on that one. There's a high pop-up over the infield. Phil Cabaretta at first is waving everybody away, and when it comes down, he's got it. So Kramer pops up and out to the first baseman of Chicago. Two out. Here's Hank Greenberg. Greenberg was the first man up in that second inning, the inning that produced the one run by which Detroit leads now. Greenberg, however, was not involved in that because he flied out to left field. Big Hank steps in there, stands up big and tall, almost straight up at the plate, crowds the plate a bit. Paso delivers him. Here it comes. Greenberg swings on. It's a bounding ball down to shortstop. Roy Hughes scoops it up to throw across the diamond in time. Greenberg is out. Shortstop to first base. So in the top of the third inning, nothing across for the Detroit Tigers. And as we head for the last half of the third inning, the score is Detroit 1, Chicago nothing. The last half of inning number 3. And the first batter for Chicago will be Roy Hughes, coming up for his first time today. Hughes, as you all know, was injured a little bit in batting practice yesterday by a line drive off the bat of Rudy York, the first baseman of the Tigers. But he's all right today, and he's in there at shortstop. Hits right-handed. So far in the series, he's had only 1 hit out of 10 times up. Pitch to him is good. A fast call strike that Virgil Trucks whipped in there. And now Trucks appears to be turning on that steam. He's a fireball pitcher, you know. Steams it in with tremendous speed. There's another one of them, and it was in and over. I doubt if Roy Hughes even saw that. It was just a blurred streak of whiteness coming across that green grass down there. Trucks works. That pitch is swung on and missed by Hughes, and he's a strikeout victim of Virgil Trucks. First strikeout for Trucks. One out for Chicago in the last half of the third. Here comes Claude Passeau up to the plate, the pitcher. Passeau, in that game he pitched last Friday, didn't distinguish himself at the plate. He went 0 for 4 and struck out 3 times. He bats right-handed. Swings on that one, misses it. Then he lifted his eyes up to the skies, as if to say, gosh, that thing was in there. I didn't get a piece of it. He didn't. He tries to bunt one, fouls it off. That's 2 strikes on Passeau. P-A-S-S-E-A-U. He may not be much of a hitter, Mr. Passeau, although he can crash one once in a while. He's one of the greatest fielding pitchers of all time. Swings on that, strikes out. Strikeout number 2 for Virgil Trucks. Both of them coming here in the last half of the third. That means that Stanley Hack comes up. Start the second batting around for the Chicago Cubs. And as I mentioned before, this Hack has been the tough guy for Trucks. He's had 3 hits, one of them a double, and 2 walks off of Trucks. Hack swings on one, slaps it out in center field. It's falling in for a hit. Doc Kramer fields it on the third bounce and throws it back in, and Hack is on at first. What kind of a jinx is it that Hack has got on Trucks? That's his 4th hit off of Trucks in 4 official times up in the series, and twice Trucks has walked him. 2 out now, Hack on at first, and here's Don Johnson. Johnson is officially 4 for 20 in the series. He lashed out 1 triple. Steps up there batting right-handed. He sacrificed, as you'll remember, when he came up his first time this afternoon back in inning number 1. That's right-handed. Fouls 1 off. It's going back into the crowd. Strike 1. No balls, 1 strike on Don Johnson. Sky Johnson has developed into a swell second baseman, learned a lot of his double play work from Joe Gordon of the New York Yankees. Taught him that very important handling of the ball there on the double plays. Johnson swings on that one. That's a well-hit ball to deep center field. Back goes Doc Kramer, way back near the ivy, and he grabs it for the out. Nice running catch back into his left by Doc Kramer. That retires the side. In the last half of the third inning, no runs for Chicago. One hit, one base runner left on, and no errors. Chicago now has no runs. They've made two hits. They've had two base runners left on. Detroit has one run on one hit. They have had three base runners left on. We're happy to say that the Armed Forces Radio Service are receiving wires from all over the world telling them that the reception of the game so far has been excellent. 165 Armed Forces radio stations out in the field and on most of the battleships at sea are picking up the shortwave transmissions and are rebroadcasting them to the men in their area or on their ships. Now here is inning number four, and the first batter up for the Tigers is Cullenbine. First pitch to him is low inside, and it almost hits him. Cullenbine had to get down to one knee, getting out of the way of that one. Passo got all of his trouble back in the second inning when he walked Cullenbine. York came up and hit a double, and Cullenbine scored the run. Now Cullenbine hits a ground ball down towards second base, and it is not brought up by Don Johnson. It was a pretty hard ball on which to make a play. It was one of those slow rollers, a little bit topped. Johnson came charging in, and it's an error on Johnson. But Cullenbine is on by virtue of an error. The second baseman of the Chicago Cubs, that's his first error in the series. And it's just the fourth error committed by the Cubs. As a matter of fact, it's just the seventh error of the entire series. But it puts Cullenbine on. Now here's Rudy York, who doubled his last time up. That's right-handed, this big Rudy. Here's a pitch to York, swings on it. A high one is popped up down toward first foul. Cavaretta waves everybody away and takes it easily for the out. One out now for Detroit in the top of the fourth. Cullenbine still at first. Hack came over there under that high hit foul down toward first, and he looked like a breaststroke swimmer, motioning everybody, out of my way, out of my way. One out. Now the batter standing in there is little Jimmy Outlaw, who was intentionally passed his first time up. Hits right-handed as the little fellow, and they play him straight away. Passo delivers. It's hit on the ground to the left of the shortstop. Johnson makes a beautiful stop on that and a beautiful play. Outlaw is out. Oh, boy, I'll remember that one a long time. I thought that was a hit on the ground into right field. It was ticketed for the hole between Cavaretta and Johnson, but Johnson went very, very swiftly to his left, stabbed the ball on the ground with his gloved hand and flipped it over to Cavaretta, and they got Outlaw by two strides. Of course, Cullenbine moved down to second on the play. Derringer is warming up out there for the Cubs, and with Richards at the plate and first open, and the pitcher scheduled to come up next, and two out, Wyatt Richards is going to be given an intentional pass. Out from behind the plate stands Mickey Livingston, and Passo is flipping the ball in there. That will be the second intentional pass given up by Passo. He passed Outlaw, as we told you, back in inning number two. It will be the fourth base on balls altogether off Passo. I don't know why that batter has to stand there while those four very wide ones are thrown in, but that's the rule. Now here comes Virgil Trucks walking toward the plate, and he's twirling his bat somewhat like a drum major. He's a good-looking guy, girls. Big collar ad type. That's right-handed. Takes a pitch that's outside. Thrown to him by Claude Passo. Ball one. Trucks is 0 for 4 in the series. He lifted a fly to the shortstop, Roy Hughes, his first time up. Runners at first and second. Here's the pitch. It swung on. He missed it. And swung with such force that he jerked his head back. Wrapped the bat around himself. One ball, one strike. Passo stretches. Delivers. Trucks started for it. Wishes he had now. It got the outside corner on him. Ball strike. One ball, two strikes on Mr. Fire Trucks. He's very fast here today with his pitching. And I've said they have the fastest fire trucks in the world in Chicago. Trucks takes it low and outside. Ball two. Two balls, two strikes on Mr. Trucks. Cullenbine at second. Richards at first. Two out. top of the fourth. Here it is. Trucks takes it. Low and inside for ball three. Now the count on the pitcher is 3-2. Paso has a bit of a job cut out for him. Here comes the 3-2 pitch. Both runners break. And it is outside for ball four. And Trucks is passed. And Paso did not like the call on that. And he comes charging in like a wild bull, shouting and yapping at Lou Jordan, the plate umpire. Now he stops just shy of the plate and does his protesting by a bit of remote control. So Trucks was passed when the 3-2 pitch was a bit outside. Richards now is parked at second. Cullenbine is at third. The bases are loaded. And it's Skeeter Webb coming up. Five men have been walked by Paso. That's the department in which his performance today does not stand up to what he did last Friday up in Detroit. Here's Webb ready to go. Swings on one. There's a long fly ball to deep center field. Back goes Pasco. Way back, 390 feet away. He's got it. So, in the top of the fourth inning for Detroit, no runs, no hits, three base runners left on, and there was one Chicago error. So the score, now as we head for the last half of the fourth inning, is Detroit 1, Chicago nothing. Ask your dealer for Gillette Brushless. If he's out of stock today because of wartime shortages, he'll have Gillette Brushless very soon. All right, it's the home half of the fourth inning, and still the Tigers are out in front, 1-0. And Virgil Trucks is out there to flip in his warm-up pitches to Paul Richards, the catcher. And coming up for the Cubs is their power now. Lowry will be the first hitter, then Cavaretta, and then Papko. This guy, Trucks, who served, incidentally, in the South and Central Pacific in the 19 months that he was in the Navy, has a very unusual distinction that he grins about. In his 19 months of service and overseas, he never rode on a boat. So there's a Navy veteran now who never rode a boat. He went by air all the time. But these are modern times. And now Trucks is ready to go, and Lowry, who flied out to right his first time up, steps in. He takes a very fast ball strike with a lot of nice hook on it. Lowry didn't even offer it, that one. The little peanuts there, batting right-handed. Trucks pitches him. It's good. Ball strike two. Trucks is turning on that steam. Who he can throw a fastball. That's two strikes on Perry Lowry now. That pitch is called strike three to Lowry. A fastball on the inside corner. Tied up peanuts. And that for Trucks is strikeout number three. Trucks does it by blazing, blinding speed. He puts all the force of that big muscular body of his into it. He just fires it in there. Now let's see what he can do with Cavaretta. Still a left-handed batter. Cavaretta swings on one, hits it on the ground. It's a single out into center field for Bell. He takes a wide turn at first, but the ball is fielded out there by Doc Kramer back in, and Cavaretta is on with a single. And it's hit number three off Trucks. And here is Andy Papko. Now here's the third time the Cubs have had the tying run on. The Tigers are in front, 1-0, and Papko, who has broken his hitting slump, is up there. He slaps one. It's hit to deep left field. There goes Greenberg for it. He takes it beautifully on the run, going to his left. And there's a long throw to first, and Cavaretta is hurrying back. Ooh, that Greenberg can throw. Greenberg had to get up on his horses and stretch those long legs on that 6-foot-5-inch terrific frame of his way off to his left, because Papko had spiked that one. But Greenberg took it on the run, and then he cut loose a tremendous throw toward first. And Cavaretta, who was all the way down to second, had to hustle like sin to get back. That's two out. Papko out. Cavaretta still at first, and here's Bill Nicholson. Nicholson fouled out to Rudy York his first time up in this ball game. The big six-footer who weighs 200 is standing there. He wants a hit. Swings on one. There's a high pop-up back of shortstop. Skeeter Webb back on the grass, waits for it. It's twisting around, and Webb has to run to get it, and he does. So that's all for Chicago in the last half of the fourth inning. No runs for the Cubs. One hit, their third. One base runner left on. and there were no errors. So at the end of four innings of play, the score is Detroit 1, Chicago nothing. We're going to pause 10 seconds for station identification. Remember, men, look sharp, feel sharp, be sharp. Use Gillette Blue Blades with the sharpest edges ever honed. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
This is WGN Chicago, serving the Middle West.
Here's the top of the fifth inning, and Eddie Mayo will hit first for Detroit. He'll be followed by Doc Kramer and Hank Greenberg. We have an excellent view of the playing field here from this booth that during the regular season is occupied by Bert Wilson, who broadcasts the Cub games. And in my book, he's a swell guy, does a swell job. It's been a pleasure being with Bert out here. But okay, Passo on the mound. He's given up only one hit, with one run has been scored off of him, is ready to go to Mayo. Mayo's third time up, he hasn't hit yet. Passo delivers him a fastball strike. I was midway between waist and knees and just over there. And the wind is blowing a bit of dust across beautiful Wrigley Field now. Now Passo is ready to go again. Mayo has flied out and grounded out in two previous appearances this game. Here it comes. Mayo swings on it. There's a ground ball to the left of the third baseman. Hack stops it. The throw over to Cavaretta in time. Mayo, giving it a terrific rundown, was out by a stride. That was a nice play by Hack, and that is the great Stan Hack himself in person on that play. One out for Detroit, top of the fifth. Here's Doc Kramer, the old fox hunter. Bat's left-handed. He hasn't lifted a ball out of the infield in this game yet. Swings on one. There's a high one going out into left field. Peanuts Lowry to his right is running under it, and he has to run to get it as the wind twists the ball away from him, but he got it. As we've remarked, that's a bad sky up there today. It's being whipped around by very stiff breezes. Typical, of course, in many seasons of the Windy City. But Peanuts Lowry got that one, and that makes it two out for Detroit in the top of the fifth, and here is Hank Greenberg. Greenberg has nary a hit off Passo in this series, and he's faced him five times. This is his sixth attempt. Passo works. Call strike. Greenberg leaning away from it, and the ball dipsy-dooed in and over and fooled Big Hank. Greenberg stands straight up, as we've told you repeatedly, holds the bat behind his shoulder, takes that one. It's just inside, right across the chest, but a little too close to him. One ball, one strike. One to nothing, Detroit leads. Greenberg swings on that one. There's a tremendous high ball. Hit deep into left field. Back is Lowry, and back almost to the vines. He pulls it in, and he had to go running around under that because the wind was twisting it, too. So Greenberg is out, and that is all for Detroit in the top of the fifth inning. No runs, no hits, nobody left on, and there were no Chicago errors. So as we head to the last half of the fifth inning, the score is Detroit 1, Chicago nothing. And now the last half of the fifth inning, the last half of the ball game of this sixth game of the World Series, and it gives me pleasure to bring back in for the play-by-play description of the remainder of this game my colleague on these broadcasts, Big Al Helfer. Al, here she is.
All right, Bill, and it has been up to this point a very swell ball game. As a matter of fact, since the second inning, in which Detroit scored a run, this guy Claude Passo has been right nigh invincible. Out on the mound now for the Detroit Tigers is Big Fire Trucks, and he's pitching now to Mickey Livingston. The right-hand hitter takes a fast curve in for a strike. No balls, one strike is the count on Livingston. He hit into a very funny double play back in the second inning. The score is Detroit 1 and Chicago nothing. And three times the Cubs have had the tying run on and haven't been able to work it around. There's a ball hit very solidly out into right center field. It drops in for a base hit. It's a single for Mickey Livingston to open the last half of the fifth inning. Roger Kramer took it on the skip, fired it back in. And that is hit number four off Virgil Trucks. Trucks has given up four hits. Claude Passo has given up but one. And now for the fourth time, the tying run is on for Chicago. And here's Hughes. And an attempted butt is good. Back past the mound. Here New York picks it up. The throw is not in time to first base, and all hands are safe. That ball was very nicely bunted back past the mound to the right side by Hughes, the second, the shortstop. And Rudy York came in fast from first base. When Fire Trucks reached down to get that ball and couldn't do it, York backed him up. His throw was to first base to Eddie Mayo, covering all right. But it was too late, and it's a base hit. Claude Passot attempts to bunt the first pitch and drops it down foul to the right of the plate for strike one. So here's the situation in the last half of the fifth inning. Livingston single to center. Hughes with his bunt single is on at first. Runners at first and second now for Chicago. The tying run has been moved down to second base. That's Mickey Livingston, the catcher. Trucks has given up five hits so far to the Cubs, and they're snarling back here in the last of the fifth inning. Trucks delivers, and Passo attempts to push a button, fouls it back onto the screen. That's strike two. And the thousands here at Wrigley Field in Chicago have suddenly come to life, fully realizing that this is a grand opportunity for the Chicago Cubs. As the score stands, Detroit one, and Chicago nothing. Claude Passo has his opportunity here of getting himself back into the ball game. He struck out back in the third inning, so he's 0-1 today. Down comes the next pitch. Passo hits it back to the mound. Trucks plays it back to third base to Outlaw. The throw comes in. The Outlaw, but not in time. Virgil Trucks, as Claude Passo hit back to the mound, elected to try for the runner at third base. His throw to third was a little high to Jimmy Outlaw, and Livingston came sliding in, and the bases are loaded, no outs, last half of the fifth inning. And the Cubs are really giving the Detroit Tigers fits right now. So that will go as a fielder's choice, which will put Claude Passo at first. Hughes has moved over to second. Mickey Livingston, the tying run with no outs, is on at third, and here is Stanley Hack. Great day in the morning. Complete complexion of this ball game right now has changed. The Detroit infield is playing up very close, hoping, of course, to have the opportunity of cutting the runoff at the plate. And George Kester is very hurriedly getting ready for the Detroit Tigers.
Trucks takes his sign from Richards, delivers to the plate, and there's a fastball hit back through the middle for a base hit.
In comes one run. In comes Hughes with the second run, and the Cubs lead 2-1. On the throw-in at the plate from center field, it got away from Paul Richards, and the runners advanced the base. The crowd had come up, grounded us out, and we were unable to tell you about it when it happened. But it's a single for Stanley Hack to drive in two runs, with Livingston scoring from third base and Hughes coming in from second. And that is hit number six and runs one and two off Trucks. And when that peg came in from center field and got away from Richards back at the plate, Hack went on down and took his position at second. And Claude Passo, who was already at second, scooted over and took his position at third base. And now the Cubs have runners at second and third. And just a moment. It's considered a hit and an error. It's considered a hit and put Stanley Hack on at second base. On the error on Paul Richards at the plate. Well, the complete complexion of this ball game here in the fifth inning certainly has changed. Rod Passo is on at third. And Richards' error. And the batter up at the plate now is Don Johnson. And there's a lot riding on every pitch right now. Down comes the first one, and Johnson swings on it and fouls it back into the stand. Very quickly here in the fifth inning, the Cubs have scored twice, and there are still no outs. And they have runners at second and third. Trucks throws, and there's a ball hit right down to second base. It's picked up by Mayo. He drives the runners back in, throws to Rudy York for the out, and that's the first one here in the fifth inning. Johnson being thrown out by second baseman Eddie Mayo of Detroit. Now with one out in the last of the fifth inning, Chicago still having runners at second and third. That's Hack at second. And at third, Claude Passot.
The batter is Peanut Slaury. He hasn't batted in a run yet in the series, and he has his opportunity right now. Little right-handed hitter standing very deep at the plate. Trucks checks Passo at third. Looks down and takes his sign now from Paul Richards. It's a pretty tense moment. The Cubs are leading 2-1. They got up the hammers here in the last half of the fifth inning and went to work. That Detroit infield is still playing up tight, very close. Trucks pitches. Lowry takes it the plate high for ball one. Trucks is very carefully studying each pitch. He knows to make a mistake here may be fatal. Lowry, with a lot of pressure on his shoulders, is bent over the plate, pumps that bat back and forth vigorously. Down comes the next pitch. Lowry takes a high inside curve that gets away from Richards, but the runners hold on. Richards gets after it, picks it up. Of course, that's just ball two to Lowry. That was a high inside curve right off the point of his chin. Right now, Trucks has come down to the plate, and he's talking to Paul Richards. His time has been called. Now the Detroit battery is in accord as to what they're going to do with Lowry. The outfield is fanned around the left a little, Peanuts, and playing him very deep, especially Hank Greenberg out in left field. He's playing way back deep. Claude Passeau at third with his windbreaker on. Down at second, Stanley Hack, who was allowed to take second on Richard's error, is moving off at second base. First is open, one out, last half of inning number five, and the Cubs lead 2-1. Trucks pumps, delivers. There's a curveball that's high. The ball three. Three balls, no strikes. That's a count on Peanut Slaury. Little fella spreads his legs even wider apart down at the plate. Bends over a little more sharply from the waist. Trucks, 6 foot, 195 pound right-hander, delivers. Lowry takes, and it's inside and high for ball four to load him up. That is the second base on balls given up by Trucks, and that's only the fifth one he's given up in all of his series pitching so far here in 1945. But here in the last half of the fifth inning, the Cubs have scored a pair of runs to lead 2-1. They have one out, the bases are loaded, and here is Phil Cavaretta, who has had one hit and two at-bats in this game this afternoon. He got a single in the fourth inning back through the middle. George Caster getting ready for Detroit in the bullpen. Down comes the pitch. Cavaretta smacks one past second out into right center field. Passo comes in to score the third run. Hack's right behind him. He too scores. And it's 4-1 Chicago. I think that's going to be all for Virgil Fire Trucks. He can't get past the fifth inning. And George Caster, the veteran right-hander, who was acquired from the St. Louis Browns the latter portion of the season here in 1945, is coming on to do the pitching for the Detroit Tigers. So let's see now. Virgil Trucks gave up seven hits and four runs. And he pitched himself 4 1/3 innings. So that means in World Series play, he's pitched 13 and 1/3 innings. And Trucks is out of there now. And George Caster, C-A-S-T-E-R, is coming on. And he'll pitch, first of all, to center fielder Andy Papko. He'll pitch to Papko here in the fifth inning. And this ball game has turned completely inside out. Lowry is at third. Cabaretta is at first and one out. Down comes the first Caster pitch, and it's swung on by Papko, and there's a high pop-up down by third base, right in fair territory. Jimmy Outlaw grabs it for the out, and Caster has put down the first man he has faced. So that's the second Chicago out here in the fifth inning. Now the ninth man to come up for Chicago, and that's Bill Nicholson. He's coming up to the plate now, and he's gone 0-2 in this afternoon's ball game. In the second inning, he fouled up and out to Rudy York, and in the fourth inning, he popped up and out to Peter Webb, the shortstop. The left-handed hitter looks even more belligerent as he takes the first pitch up against his chest for ball one. This is George Caster, now pitching for the Detroit Tigers. Caster leans forward, takes his sign from Richards, now delivers the plate, and Nicholson hits a foul ball back to first base on the ground all the way. So it's one and one. One ball, one strike. And down in the bullpen for the Detroit Tigers, I believe that's Dizzy Trout warming up. There's another conference now as time is called here in the fifth inning. George Caster and Paul Richards are making it up between them just how they're going to continue to pitch to Bill Nicholson. Here for Chicago in the fifth inning, they've scored four times and now lead 4-1 over the Detroit Tigers. Runners at first and third, two outs, and here's Nicholson with a count of 1-1. Caster delivers and Nicholson swings, and there's a foul ball back onto the screen. That means the count on Big Bill is 1-2. One ball, two strikes. Caster's got his work very definitely cut out for him. It's a pretty tough spot to relieve in a place like this. He delivers. And Eckler is swung on and missed by Nicholson for strike three. And that's all for the Cubs here in the fifth inning. However, they picked themselves up four runs. I will count up the hits for you. One, two, three, four. Is that what you get, Bill? Four runs on four hits, two men left, and there was one Chicago, one Detroit error. That was on Richards, the catcher, as he failed to get a throw in from center field. So at the end of five full innings of play, the score stands Chicago 4 and Detroit 1. Now let's set the Cubs for you defensively as we start the top half of the sixth inning. Claude Passeau is pitching. Mickey Livingston is doing the catch. At first base is Phil Cavaretta. At second base is Don Johnson. Roy Hughes is at shortstop. Stanley Hack is at third. Out in left field is Harry Peanuts Lowry. In center field is Andy Fasco. And in right field, Bill Nichols. The batter coming up there now is Roy Cullenbine, who was walked in the second and was safe at first base when an error was committed to a line to get there. That was Don Johnson's error. He hits left-handed, and Passo feeds him a curveball that's in and over for a called strike. This Passo is a pretty tough pitcher when he's a front runner, and he's a front runner now. His club has gotten him a three-run advantage. Passo delivers now. Cullenbine hits one back past the mound to second base, and Don Johnson can't come up with it. Caroms off his glove, rolls up his arm, and flips all the way back to shortstop. And Cullenbine is on at first base. It's a base hit for Cullenbine. That was a pretty hard-hit ground ball. So he hits one right off the second baseman's glove. And that's the second hit given up by Passo. And the batter now is Rudy York. Old Kickapoo got himself a double into right center field back in the second inning, but he fouled up and out to Cavaretta back in the fourth. So Rudy has had one hit, a double, in two at-bats. Passo checks the runner back over his shoulder, goes to the plate, and York takes, and there's a low curve under the knees for ball one. It's a 4-1 ball game in favor of Chicago. We're in the top half of inning number six. Cullenbine has just singled, and he's on at first. York, a big right-hand hitter, trying to do something with Claude Passo, swings on the next pitch and fouls it right off the end of his bat down toward the Tiger dugout. So the count on York is 1-1. One ball, one strike. Cullenbine is playing it very safely there at first base. He doesn't take much of a lead. The outfield is fanned around the left and is playing very deep to Rudy York. Passo delivers. York swings, and there's a high foul ball back at first base, and it floats over into the stand. All the count on York is one ball, two strikes. Passo motions Pafko to get farther over into left center field, and he does. Pafko gets himself ready. Now Passo looks out and checks him and nods. That's where he wants him to play. So the pitch to the plate is through to have a call, strike three. The peg goes down to second. Gets away from Johnson, and the runner is safe. That's Cullenbine. So York strikes out, and Cullenbine will undoubtedly be given a stolen base. And Livingston pegged that ball down to Johnson, but it was low and into the dirt and got away from Johnson. Cullenbine is on at second. So that is the first strikeout for Claude Passo. And Cullenbine on at second base now as Jimmy Outlaw comes wandering up there to bat. Outlaw was walked in the second, was thrown out by Johnson in the fourth. So he's 0-1. He's a little right-handed batter. And the Chicago Cubs were trying to pull the hidden ball trick on Roy Cullenbine with Hughes holding that ball at shortstop. But Cullenbein was well aware of the fact that Hughes had that ball, so he just stood on second until Roy gave it up to the pitcher, Claude Passeau. You know, the Cubs have worked that a couple of times this year, that hidden ball trick. Worked it in some very strategic spots, too. Now, here comes the pitch to the plate. It swung on, hit right back to the mound. Passeau grabs it, fires it over to first base to Cavaretta, and that is all for little Jimmy Outlaw. As a matter of fact, that line drive was almost held by Passeau. We're in the top of the sixth inning now, with a runner at second for Detroit, two outs, and Paul Richards, the catcher, is scheduled to hit, but it's not going to be Richards. I believe it's going to be Bobby Mayer, who played the greater portion of baseball last year for Buffalo. It's Bob Mayer going to hit for Richards. Bobby Mayer is going to bat for Richards here in the sixth inning. That means we're going to have a new catcher for the Detroit Tigers in the last half of the sixth inning. But Mayer has walked up to the plate. He's a right-hand hitter, a short, squat, well-put-together fellow, with legs wide spread apart. By trade, Mayer is an infield. Bob Mayer stands 5'9", weighs 180 pounds. He's from Donato, New Jersey. 28-year-old fellow that looks every bit an athlete, and certainly is one. There's a fast pitch to him as Passeau offers the first one, and it's a curve ball just off the short ribs for ball one. Right tight up against a hitter. This is Bob Mayer hitting for Paul Richards. Passeau stretches, looks back at Cullenbein, delivers the plate. Mayer takes it, and it's in there for a strike. That one didn't have a lot of zip on it, but Claude Passeau had a nice curve working in that time. It was about a medium speed change of pace. So the count on Bob Mayer hitting for Paul Richards is 1-1. Passeau delivers. Mayer hits one right back to the mound. And once more, Claude Passeau knocks it down. Picks it up, throws it over to Phil Cavaretta, but not in time. And it's a base hit for Bob Mayer. That was a hard hit ball right back to the mound. And Claude Passeau once more threw that glove up. But this time it was a glove hand he threw up. The ball caromed off his glove, rolled to his left, back toward first base. And Claude Passeau chased it, picked it up, tried to flip it very quickly to Phil Cavaretta, but he wasn't able to do so. Now Johnny McHale is going to come up and do a little hitting. Of course, he'll be batting for George Caster. This is the third time he's appeared as a pinch hitter. He's batting here in the sixth inning, and that means we're going to probably have Tommy Bridges in the last half of inning number six. Of course, with that base hit, smacked back off the pitcher's glove by pinch hitter Bob Mayer here in the sixth inning. Roy Cullenbein moved down and took third easily, and that is hit number three off Passeau. Johnny McHale has just been officially announced here at Wrigley Field in Chicago, and he's batting for George Caster. So Caster, in his work this afternoon, pitches two-thirds of an inning and goes out. McHale is tall and slender, and hits left-handed. 6'3", weighs 200 pounds, and he's a native of Detroit. 24-year-old fella. Very clean-cut guy, as a matter of fact. Passeau checks his runners at first and third, delivers the plate, and there's a curve in for a strike. No balls, one strike. Now McHale at the plate, swings on the next pitch and doesn't get it. Todd Passeau had a fast curve zipping in there just over the inside corner, just under the letters of the shirt. So the count on pinch hitter McHale is no balls, two strikes. It means we're going to have a new battery for the Detroit Tigers in the last half of inning number six. It's a 4-1 ball game in favor of Chicago over Detroit. Detroit has runners at first and third. Two outs. Pitch to the plate is taken by McHale, and it's a fast curve outside. That's ball one. One ball, two strikes. Passeau takes his sign now from Livingston. They both nod. They know what this one's going to be. Passeau stretches, settles down. Here comes his 1-2 delivery. McHale takes it, and it's in there for call strike three. So for Detroit in the sixth inning, no runs, two hits, two men left, and there were no Chicago errors. And Passeau picks up his second strikeout. So at the end of 5.5 innings of play, the score stands Chicago 4 and Detroit 1. Because someone misread instructions, modern pitchers throw the ball 6 inches farther than the 60 feet intended years ago when the distance was increased from 50 feet.
It's no accident, however, that Gillette Shaving Cream produces up to four times as much lather as brands priced the same. No, sir. Gillette chemists see to that. Also, they make sure Gillette Shaving Cream produces a sponge-like lather that holds a barrel of water and releases it freely so that your whiskers get a thorough soaking and soften up in a hurry for smooth, easy shaving. Men's Gillette Lather Shaving Cream stays wet on your face and keeps your whiskers properly conditioned while you shave. Moreover, it is kind to your skin and has a fleeting fragrance men prefer. You get cleaner, smoother, better-looking shaves and save money, too. When you use Gillette Lather Shaving Cream, you do save money at a quarter. Now here at Wrigley Field in Chicago, we're to have the last half of inning number six. And the first man to come up to the plate will be out there in just a moment. We'd like to set the Detroit Tigers for you defensively as we go into the last half of the sixth inning. It looks as though Swift is going to come in all right to do the catching for Detroit. Yes, Swift is coming in. It's going to be Swift to do the catching for the Detroit Tigers. We as yet have not been given the pitcher for Detroit. We assume it will be Tommy Bridges. However, we as yet are not quite sure because we are having a lot of activity down in the bullpen of the Detroit Tigers. However, we do know that we're going to have a new battery. And Steve O'Neill is taking his good old time about announcing the pitcher that's to come out, but I believe it's the little game rooster Tommy Bridges that's going to come out. Yes, Tommy Bridges, a veteran of the wars for Detroit, and he's coming out right now. Tommy Bridges, standing 5'11 and 160 pounds. He's a 38-year-old right-hander from Gordonsville, Tennessee. And it's good to see Tommy Bridges back down on that mound. Tommy served quite a bit of time in the armed forces. But he's back once again, and he's out there where he likes to be in World Series play. So Bridges is pitching here in the last half of the sixth inning. And his battery mate is Swift. S-W-I-F-T, Bob Swift, is doing the catching. So that's the new battery for the Detroit Tigers. Tommy Bridges pitching, and Bob Swift catching. The rest of the ball club defensively remains the same. Rudy York is at first. At second is Eddie Mayo. At shortstop is Skeeter Webb. At third base is Jimmy Outlaw. Out in left field is big Hank Greenberg. In center field, the veteran Doc Kramer. And in right field, Roy Kellenbach. And the first man to come up to the plate is Livingston for the Chicago Cubs. Livingston came up back in the fifth inning and smacked himself a very sharp single hit out into center field. Livingston came also around to score a run in that big four-run, five-fifth inning that the Cubs put on here at Wrigley Field. Now he's climbing in at the plate right now to face Tommy Bridges, the right-hander. Tommy stretches that right arm of his out on the mound. There's a fellow that's got a lot of competitive spirit, this Tommy Bridges. He's one of the fine figures of baseball. Little Tommy throws the first pitch. There's a fast curve in for a strike. Bridges looks just as fast as he did the last time I saw him. Bridges blowing on his pitching hand to keep it warm. Now he's ready. Throws to Livingston. There's a curve in for a call strike again. No balls, two strikes. There's a count on Mickey Livingston, the first hitter up for Chicago here in the last half of the sixth inning. Bridges pumps, throws 0-2. A curve ball that's low and into the dirt for ball one. Bridges ready with the 1-2 pitch to Livingston. Mickey standing deep at the plate, hitting right-handed. Bridges delivers, and Livingston swings, and there's a lofty fly ball going out into left field. Hank Greenberg comes up in a big hurry. He's under it and drops it. And running it out, Livingston is trying for second and gets into second base. Hank Greenberg came in very fast and tried to reach down around his shoe tops to pick up one for an out. And the ball caromed off his glove and dropped in front of him. And Hank picked that ball up and fired it into second base, but by that time, Livingston was already there. So Chicago now has a base runner on at second base. And it's a base hit. It's going to be a two-bagger. As it was figured that Hank Greenberg could not have made that catch. However, he did get his glove on it and wasn't able to quite hold it. But it's a double for Livingston, hit into left field, and that is hit number one off Bridges and hit number eight for Chicago. And the batter now is Hughes, who has had one hit and two drives. Bridges pitches him, and Hughes swings on one, hits it just inside of first base, out into the right field corner.
Here comes Livingston around third. He's being waved on in, and it's a two-bagger standing up for Hugh. So the Chicago Cubs pick up another run here in the last half of the sixth inning. They now lead 5-1. Todd Tasso is coming up to the plate. Listen. Now Claude Tasso has moved in there. Tommy Bridges, who has been 14 years with Detroit, 38-year-old right-hander, who was a sergeant for 2 years in Uncle Sam's Army, is out here pitching once more in the World Series. He's going to throw to Claude Tasso. There's a high curve, and Tasso tries to bunt it, misses it completely. And the throw comes down to second base, and it catches off the runner, who is Hughes, and he breaks for third, and the throw comes down from second base on the third. And Jimmy Outlaw spots it on him, sliding in for the tag, and the out. Well, the count at the plate is strike one on Claude Tasso as he missed that attempt to bunt. And Hughes is out at third base, sort of out the way of the big horn, but nevertheless he's out. And the catcher to the second baseman and down to the third baseman. Tasso takes the next pitch under his knees low by Tommy Bridges for ball one. One ball, one strike. So Hughes was trying for third and was gotten at third very nicely. One run has been scored by Chicago here in the sixth inning, and they lead 5-1. Bridges pitches, Tasso swings, and there's a high foul ball out back of first base, and it's going over and into the stands. So the count on Tasso now is one ball, two strikes. Down in the bullpen for Detroit, old flutterball Jim Tobin is starting to get ready. As Tommy Bridges, who is out on the mound right now for Detroit, in World Series play in the past, has won four games and lost one. He throws to the plate, and Tasso swings on one, hits a blooper down to second base, and Eddie Mayo grabs it for the out. Sort of a half-line drive. It was hit right down to second base to Mayo. The batter is Stanley Hack. Hack moves in there now, hits left-handed. He's had two hits and two at-bats this afternoon. That's two official at-bats. He was up there three times but walked once. Bridges comes down with his first pitch, and it's a fast one through there for a strike. He throws again, and Hack's after a high curve and misses it for strike two. This Bridges, memory serves me rightly, back in 1935, pitched and won the deciding game against the Chicago Cubs to put the Detroit Tigers in as world champions that year. He throws to the plate now, and Hack takes a curve that bites into the dirt in front of the plate. Of course, that's ball one. One ball, two strikes. That's the count on Stanley Hack here in the last half of the sixth inning. Two outs, nobody on, and one run has been scored by Chicago here in the sixth, and they lead 5-1. Bridges easily over his head now. Delivers to the plate, and Hack takes. It's low under his knees for ball two. Two balls, two strikes. Bridges wiping his hand across the lettering of his shirt front. Now pumps, delivers two and two. There's a high curve on the outside for ball three. Three and two is the count now on Stanley Hack. With two away in the last half of the sixth inning, no base runners, and one score has come in. A pair of doubles were put together by Chicago here in the sixth for Livingston and Hughes. The next pitch is swung on by Hack, and there's a bounding ball to short. Skeeter Webb handles it flawlessly, throws to first base, and that is all for Hack, going out from short to first. So in the sixth inning for the Chicago Cubs, they pick up one run on two hits, nobody left, and there were no errors on the part of the Detroit Tigers. So at the end of six innings of play, the score stands at 5-1 in favor of Chicago over Detroit. We're going into the top half of inning number seven. And the first man up in the seventh inning for Detroit will be their leadoff hitter, Skeeter Webb. Now let's set the Chicago Cubs for you defensively as we start the seventh inning. Out on the mound is Claude Tasso, who has given up just three hits so far to the Detroit Tigers. His battery mate is Mickey Livingston. At first base is Phil Cabaretta. At second base, Don Johnson. At third base is Stanley Hack. The shortstop is Roy Hughes. Out in left field is Peanuts Lowry. In center field is Andy Pafko, and in right field, Bill Nicholson. And that's how we are to begin the top half of the seventh inning. Once again, in case you tuned in late, the score, Chicago Cubs 5 and the Detroit Tigers 1. The Cubs picked up 7 hits off Trucks and picked up 4 runs. They got 2 hits and 1 run off Bridges. And Hostetler is going to bat for Skeeter Webb. That'll be Chuck Hostetler. He was born in Uniontown, Pennsylvania. He's 6 feet, weighs 175 pounds, and he's just a kid at 40 years of age. It's left-handed. Hostetler waiting. Down comes the first pitch to him, and it's a fast curve under his knees for ball one. So this is Chuck Hostetler, H-O-S-T-E-T-L-E-R. Tasso gets ready, sidearms his next pitch in, and it's good for a strike. Just above the knees and right through the middle. Probably we'll have Joe Hoover playing shortstop for the Tigers when they come in defensively in the last half of the seventh inning. Now Tasso throws 1-1. Hostetler swings, and there's a ground ball down to Hack. It bounces off his shoulder. Hack grabs it now and does not make a throw. That was a hard-hit ground ball down to Stanley Hack at third. He tried to come up with it. The ball rolled up and hit him in the chest, bounced high. And by the time he picked it up, he was charged with an error when he couldn't make a throw. So Stanley Hack has committed an error, and that is the second error against Chicago here this afternoon, and it's the fifth error they have in the series. And Hostetler batting for Webb is on here in the seventh inning by Hack's error at third base. The batter now is Eddie Mayo, hitting left-handed. Tasso checks his runner, Hostetler, back at first base. Now throws to the plate, and Mayo takes a nice curve in for a strike. No balls, one strike. Hostetler, 40-year-old veteran, is down at first base. He doesn't take a very big lead. He can run pretty well, despite his age. Tasso throws. There's a ball hit down to first base. Cavaretta comes up with it, and his only chance for a play is to step over on first base for the out, with Hostetler moving down to second. So that's the first out for Detroit here in the top of the seventh inning. Now Detroit has Hostetler at second, one out, and the batter is Doc Kramer. This afternoon, Kramer has been up there 3 times, and he's been held hitless. Yesterday, Kramer had 1 for 4. So in 2 days' work now, he's 1 for 7. The veteran hits left-handed. Tasso throws a knuckler in there that's hit through the hole between short and third and out into left field. It's a base hit. Here comes Larry Sill in, and Larry has gotten the man trapped between home and third base simply because he fell down as he was rounding third. And the throw came into Livingston. He immediately returned that ball back to third base to Stan Hack as the runner, Hostetler, tried to get back to third, and he was tagged out. Then on the throw-in, Kramer went down and took second base. So it's a single off Claude Passeau, and that's the fourth hit given up by Claude. And he moved Hostetler down to third all right, but Hostetler fell down as he rounded third and tried for home. And the throw came in from Larry, back to the catcher, Livingston, and the play was made back to third base, and the out was affected on Hostetler. So now quickly there are 2 outs, and Kramer is on at second, and the batter is Hank Greenberg, and the score still stands 5 for Chicago, 1 for the Tigers. Bud Passo taking a little time out at the mound. He's kicking the mud out of his spikes. That was a pretty close call for him. Hostetler tried to score from second base, and he had the misfortune of falling down as he rounded third. Tasso pitches Greenberg, and there's a fast curve in for a strike. Tasso tilling the soil out at the mound. He's kicking dirt all over the place with those spikes of his. Taking his good old time. Detroit has threatened him here in the seventh inning, but an unfortunate occurrence and an incident has helped the Chicago Cubs considerably. Al Passo is ready, delivers to the plate, 0-1. It's a fast curve low. That levels the count off to Greenberg at 1-1. Kramer is on at second, a single to left, and took second on the throw in. There was a play made for him, all right, but it was much too late. Kramer leads down off second base. He's the only base runner for Detroit. Two outs, top of the seventh. Passo delivers to the plate, and Greenberg takes, and there's a high curve right under his chin. A ball two. Dizzy Trout is getting ready down in the Tiger bullpen. Al Paso checks his runner at second. That's Kramer. Goes into his stretch. Again checks Kramer at second. Now throws to the plate. Greenberg takes a high curve off the peak of the cap for ball three.
Pack this afternoon has gone over three. A pair of fly balls to left field. And in the third inning, he was thrown out by the then shortstop, Troy Hughes. Al Paso is ready. Delivers to him. Greenberg backs up from an inside curve for ball four. And that is base on balls number five off Paso. Of course, he's given a couple up. Points of strategy. But Greenberg is on at first now. Kramer is on at second. There are two outs, and the score stands Chicago 5 and Detroit 1. And the batter is Roy Cullenbine. Cullenbine got himself a scratch single back to second base in the sixth inning. He was a base runner in the fourth on Johnson's error. Paso juggling that ball around in his mitt now. Checks his runners once more. Throws to the plate. And Cullenbine swings on, hits it right back through the middle out into center field for a single. Brock Kramer comes around third. He comes in to score the second Detroit run. And Greenberg holds on at second base as he advances there. Cullenbine hits through the middle and bats in his fourth run of the series. And that is hit number five off Paso and run number two. And Greenberg is now on at second base. For Detroit has scored here in the seventh inning. I believe Charlie Grimm may take Claude Paso out here in this spot. Hank Wise is down at the bullpen and he's ready. And I believe Wise is coming in. Claude Paso is talking to Charlie Grimm right now, and the thousands of fans get up and start to yell, no, no, no. But the man that knows more about that than anyone else is the fellow that's running this ball club right here at Chicago, and that's Charlie Grimm. And here comes Hank Wise into relief in the seventh inning. And Claude Paso is through after pitching six and two-third innings. And Hank Wise is being called upon. Apparently, Charlie Grimm believes, as does Claude Paso, that that right hand of his is probably starting to feel the strain, the pain that has been going through it ever since he was cracked back in the sixth inning when Outlaw hit back to the mound. Now here's a round of applause for Paso as he comes off the mound. Henry Wise has just been announced to the thousands here at Wrigley Field. And while he throws a few warm-up pitches now, gets ready to pitch to Rudy York here in the seventh inning. We've got just enough time to pause 10 seconds for station identification. Remember, men, look sharp, feel sharp, be sharp. Use Gillette Blue Blades with the sharpest edges ever honed. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
This is WGN Chicago, serving the Middle West.
Right back here at Wrigley Field in Chicago. We're in the top half of the seventh inning of the sixth game of the World Series, and Henry Wise is ready to go. He has just relieved Claude Paso. He's going to try to save this game for Claude. The score stands 5-2 in favor of the Chicago Cubs. Wise makes his first pitch, and York swings on it and hits it foul down to the left of the plate for strike one. Henry Wise has been quite a ball player for Chicago this year. As a matter of fact, he's the fellow that everyone around the circuit claims pitched the Chicago Cubs into the pennant this year, along with Hank Baroa. Wise isn't very big. Meaning of that is he doesn't look very big when you take a look at Greenberg, York, and Cullenbine. Right now, York takes a look at a curveball that's outside. That's ball one. One ball, one strike. Because Hank Wise is just a half inch under 6 feet and weighs about 180 pounds. York swings on the next pitch. There's a solid spike hit into left field for a single. Big Greenberg is coming around third. He's coming on in to score. And it's now a 5-3 ball game in favor of the Cubs. This has all happened with two outs. York A solid line drive into left field for a single, and Cullenbine moves down to second and holds on. Greenberg came around from second to score. And that's the second run that Detroit has scored here in the seventh inning. That hit is off Wise, but the run is off Passo. The score is now 5-3 in favor of Chicago. And with two outs, Detroit still has runners at first and second. Cullenbine at second, York at first. And here is Jimmy Outlaw. He was walked his first at bat. Wise delivers, and there's a fast curve hit right down to second base. Johnson comes up with it, plays it the short way to Hughes for a force out on Rudy York coming down. So York is forced out at second from second baseman Johnson to shortstop Hughes. Let's see, in the seventh inning, two runs for the Detroit Tigers on a total of 1, 2, 3 hits. A pair of men left on, and there was one error. So at the end of 6.5 innings of play, the score stands 5 for the Chicago Cubs and for the Detroit Tigers, 3. When I tell you that he's one of the most famous shortstops of all time, the youngest manager ever appointed in the majors, and that he hung up the American League record for double plays, you just know I'm talking about Lou Boudreau of the Cleveland Indians. Come on in here, Lou, and take the mic, and let's fan about the greatest double play combination in shaving history, the Gillette Razor and Gillette Blue Blade.
Okay, Al, I go for that. There is a great team. The slickest combination I know about. I always use the Gillette Razor, so naturally I use Gillette Blue Blades. On my scorecard, no other blades compare with them.
Thanks, Lou Boudreau. And say, you look sharp.
Well, thanks, Al. I feel sharp.
Ah, there you have it, men. For the best-looking shaves of your life, the quickest and easiest by far, get hep to the Gillette Razor and today's Gillette Blue Blade. Look sharp, feel sharp, be sharp. Use Gillette Blue Blades with the sharpest edges ever honed. And Hoover goes to shortstop now for the Detroit Tigers in the last half of the seventh inning. That's the only change in the inner defense. And the batter up for Chicago here in the seventh inning is Don Johnson, their second baseman. He hits right-handed. Bridges feeds him a fast curve that's in and over for a called strike. Now Bridges is ready once more. Throws a high hook that swung on and drilled foul back to first base and into the field seats. Now very quickly, the count on Johnson is no balls, two strikes. It's a 5-3 ball game in favor of the Chicago Cubs. We'll set the Tigers for you defensively just the moment we have an opportunity. We can tell you that it's Bridges pitching and Bob Swift catching. Right now, Bridges is ready to deliver to the plate to Don Johnson, the Chicago second baseman. Here comes the 0-2 pitch and is taken for a called strike 3. And that's all for Johnson. He's out of there very quickly. And that for Bridges is strikeout number 1, strikeout number 4. Now the inner defense for you for Detroit. We have a moment's opportunity. Rudy York is still at first. Eddie Mayo is at second. Joe Hoover has gone into shortstop. And Jimmy Outlaw is still at third. Now here is Peanuts Lowry up at the plate. He swings on the first pitch and there's a slow bounding ball to short. Hoover comes in and he can't come up with it. Hoover had that one get away from him down at shortstop. It was a slow bounding ball, one of those do or you don't plays. And we all knew that Hoover had to hurry if he was going to throw out Peanuts Lowry, because this Peanuts Lowry is awfully fast. But it goes as a base hit for little Harry. Oh, he's on at first base. They hit the shortstop. That is hit number 3 off Bridges. Hit number 10, as far as Chicago is concerned. And the batter up there now is Phil Cavaretta. Bridges looks back at first base, delivers to the plate, and Cavaretta takes a low, fast one under his knees for ball 1. Cavaretta has had 2 straight hits in his last 2 at-bats. He pounded one back through the middle in the 4th to center field, and in the 5th inning, with the infield playing up tight, he pounded one past Mayo into right center for a base hit. Bridges pitches him now, and there's a high, fast curve on the outside for ball 2. Bob Swift made a bluff throw to first, but didn't go through with it. Ball's been returned to the mound of Bridges. Lowry leads off at first now. Bridges throws to the plate. Cavaretta takes a curve just off his hips on the inside for ball 3. 3 balls, no strikes. 1 out for Chicago, last half of the 7th inning. And the Cubs lead in this ball game 5-3. Now Bridges is ready. Down comes a pitch. Cavaretta takes, and it's outside for ball 4. Well, Cavaretta's walked. Lowry moves into second. And that is the first base on balls given up by Bridges. And the batter now is Andy Pathko. Pafko got a hit his first at-bat. That was back in the second inning. But he died in a very peculiar double play. And since that time, in the fourth and fifth, he hasn't been able to hit. Now with one out and runners at first and second, Pafko takes the first pitch from Bridges. Good for a strike. No balls, one strike is the count on right-handed hitting Andy Pafko. And he's standing a little deeper at the plate now than he has been previously. Bridges, an artist with the curveball, is ready. Again checking his base runners, throws to the plate, and Pafko swings. There's a long drive deep into left field. It's way back there. Hank Greenberg goes back right up against the wall and makes the catch. A nice running catch by Hank Greenberg. And the runners had broken, and they had to hustle back in. Andy Pafko caught a hold of one all right, but Hank Greenberg played him just right, deep in left field. Well, that really brought the thousands of fans here at Wrigley Field right up off their chairs. Thought for a minute that Andy Pafko may have hit one. Time is being called down on the diamond now. Once more, a ball down in the bullpen had gotten away from the bullpen catcher and had rolled out into right field. But here's the situation now in the last half of the seventh inning. The Cubs have runners at first and second, two outs, and here is Bill Nicholson, who is base hit hungry. He's been up there three times and has gone 0 for 3. He fouled up to Cavaretta and fouled out of there in the second inning. Then in the fourth inning, he popped up to the shortstop, who was then Skeeter Webb, and he struck out in the fifth inning. Now we're ready to go with Nicholson stepping in, hitting left-handed and standing deep in the plate and sort of crowding it slightly from behind. Bridges settles down, looks at his base runner, throws to the plate, and drives Nicholson back with a curve for ball one. One ball, no strikes. Last of the seventh. Four Chicago runners at first and second. Two outs. They lead 5-3. Bridges ready, delivers. Nicholson takes a low curve under his knees. That's ball two. Two balls, no strikes. Bridges will be pitching very carefully to Nicholson as Bill hits a long ball. Lowry leads off second. Cavaretta leads off first. Down comes the pitch. Nicholson swings and misses right off the end of his bat for a strike. Bill was really after that one, swinging from the spikes up. Count on Nicholson now is two balls, one strike. Now we're ready. Bridges checks again, throws to the plate, a high curve, swung on and fouled off. Count is 2-2 on Nicholson. Now Bridges is ready. He comes to his 2-2 delivery to the plate. Nicholson takes it. It's low into the dirt for ball three. Bob Swift very nicely came up with that one. So it's a 3-2 count on Bill Nicholson, the Chicago right fielder. We told you Nicholson has gone 0-3 today. It's 5-22 for the series. Takes the next pitch and it's low for ball four, and that loads the bases. That's the second base on balls given up by Bridges. That is the fourth base on balls handed to Chicago this afternoon, as Virgil Prutz, the starting pitcher, had given up two. Now the bases are loaded here in the last of the seventh, and Mickey Livingston with two outs is coming up to the plate. Lowry's at third, Cavaretta at second, and Nicholson at first. Bridges pumps once and throws. There's a fast curve that's on the inside just off the belt buckle for ball one. Livingston so far this afternoon has had a single and a double in three at-bats. He's got himself a double in sixth inning, but it's the right field. He takes a hard curve right off the peak of the cap for ball two. Tommy Bridges now has gotten behind of this right-handed hitter with two balls and no strikes. The bases are completely jammed with Cubs. The boys in the trade say the Ducks are on the pond. Now Bridges is ready. Delivers 2-0. And there's a low curve outside for ball three. Three balls, no strikes. It's a count on right-handed hitting Mickey Livingston, the catcher of the Chicago Cubs. Bridges pitches, and there's a high curve for ball four. That forces in a run. Livingston is going to be credited with batting in a run. I believe that's going to be all for Tommy Bridges. As Steve O'Neill comes out of the Tiger dugout, starts stomping out toward the mound. He wants to talk to this little game rooster that's come on here in the World Series for Detroit. That was the third walk given up by Bridges, and it costs him the second run. And the score right now is 6 for Chicago and 3 for Detroit. And I think Al Benton is going. Yes, here comes Big Al Benton. Maybe this chargee. He's coming on to do a little pitching for the Detroit Tigers. Benton has been in 2 games and has pitched 4 in the third inning. Benton is on here right now. Benton has pitched some pretty good baseball for Detroit here in the World Series. Here, we told you he pitched 4 in the third innings. He's given up only 5 hits and 1 run. And that run, incidentally, was earned. He's passed no one and struck out 4. So that's pretty good pitching. And Benton will pitch first of all here to Hughes, the shortstop. Now Hughes is standing up there at the plate. Bases are still loaded. Benton makes his first pitch, and it's a low, fast curve for ball one. The walk was given to Livingston, forced in a run. He's credited with batting in another run series. That's his fourth, incidentally. The next pitch is swung on, and there's a bounding ball hit right back past the mound, and it cannot be gotten by Benton. Cams over to shortstop, and Joe Hoover tries to come up with it, but finally it's Jimmy Outlaw who grabs it. And the bases remain loaded, and another run comes in. Cabaretta comes streaking in from third. And it's a base hit, a very solid base hit for Hughes, and he hit it right back past the shin of Al Benton, the pitcher. So the bases are loaded once more. That's another run in. The hit comes off Benton, and the run comes off Bridges. So it's a 7-3 ball game now for Chicago. And the batter coming up there is Hank Wise. Wise hitting right-handed. He takes the first pitch from Benton, and the big fella has it in there for a strike. The bases are loaded. 2 outs. Last half of the 7th inning. The Cubs have scored twice, and they're threatening even more. Wise reaches for a curve and misses it completely for strike 2. Benton pumps, throws. Wise swings, loses his bat, and strikes out. Well, that's all for Chicago here in the last of the 7th inning. Benton registers a strikeout. Now let's see and count up the damage in the 7th inning. 2 runs for Chicago. They got 1-2 hits. There were 3 men left, and there were no errors on Detroit. So at the end of 7 full innings of play, it is a 7-3 ball game in favor of Chicago over Detroit. Well, the top of the 8th inning. And the first man up in the 8th inning is scheduled to be Bob Swift, the catcher. He's coming up there right now. Bob hits right-handed. Bob is just 1 inch under 6 feet, weighs 185 pounds. He's 29 years of age and comes from a place called Kip, Kansas. Bob's a pretty husky fella. He can give that ball a pretty good ride when he gets a hold of it. As far as the series is concerned, he's done a little work for Detroit. However, he's only been up once, and he's 0 for 1 as far as the series is concerned. So he has no batting percentage. Now he's ready here as a right-handed hitter. Top of the 8th inning with the score standing 7 for Chicago, 3 for Detroit. Hank Wise pumps, the right-hander delivers, and there's a curve that's in and over for called strike 1. When this ball game started out, it certainly looked as though the Tigers were really going to hand the Cubs a shellac. There is a high curve flipped in, but it's just outside for ball one. 1 ball, 1 strike. That's the count on Bob Swift. Wise tries another curve, but again it's outside, and that's ball 2. See, Jim Tobin is still throwing down in the Detroit bullpen, which leads us to believe that the Benton may not hit. Now Wise delivers a low, fast curve at the plate for ball 3. And now the count on Bob Swift is 3 balls, 1 strike. And he's gotten ahead. Hank Wise. Now Wise takes his sign, delivers, and there's a curve that steps off outside for ball 4. And the first Tiger up in the 8th inning is walked. And that's Swift, and he's on at first base, and that's the first base on balls given up by Wise. Looks as though Hub Walker is coming up to hit for Benton. Yes, here he comes. Hub Walker, who spent a good deal of the year up at Buffalo. Bob Walker has just been announced as batting for Benton here in the eighth inning. He was up as a pinch hitter once, and he's 0-1. Wise curves him and gets it in. A good first strike. Walker, as we said, hits left-handed and stands deep at the plate and sort of away from it. Rips that bat way down with an arm. Wise gets ready, delivers him. Walker jumps back from an inside slant for ball one. One ball, one strike is the count on Al Walker. Hub's no youngster. He's 39 years of age. He's been around baseball a long time. He swings on this next pitch. Hits it just inside of first base fair. Down into the right field corner. There goes Swift digging past third, second and goes on into third. It's a double for Hub Walker, the pinch hitter. He leaned into that one. Hit it just between Cavaretta and the first base bag. And out into right field. Now the runners at second and third for Detroit, the top of the eighth, and nobody out. And that off Wise is hit number two, and that's the seventh hit. As far as the Chicago Cubs pitching, giving up hits to Detroit is concerned, in other words, Detroit has seven hits off Paso and Wise. Down in the bullpen, very hurriedly getting ready for Chicago, Ray Prim, or Pop Prim, the 39-year-old left-hander, the boys on the ball club call him Pop, and High Vandenberg, big 6-foot right-hander. But Wise is going to stay in that ball game. Wise is going to pitch right now to Hoover, the right-hand hitting shortstop. You recall he came into play in the seventh inning. First pitch to Hoover is a high curve on the outside for ball one. Joe Hoover stands 6 feet, 175 pounds. He's from Brawley, California. He swings on the next pitch, and there's a ball hit down to Stanley Hack. It bounces off Hack's chest. He picks up, throws, not in time. And a run comes in to score from third base for Detroit. Stanley Hack came in and committed an error as he tried to pick one up off the grass. That's a third error for the Chicago Cubs here this afternoon. And that allows Bob Swift to come in from third base. Now it's a 7-4 ball game in favor of Chicago. Hoover is on at first base. And, of course, Walker held right on at second. So Detroit has runners now at first and second. No outs. And the man up at the plate is Eddie Mayo, the second baseman. He takes a fast curve. It's right through, just above the knees for a called strike. Well, Hank Wise has got a little trouble here in the eighth inning. He delivers to the plate, and Mayo swings on it, and there's a ball laced out into center field. It drops in there for a base hit. In comes one run to score, and there's the drive to second base, and a nice throw from Andy Papko to second baseman Don Johnson. The slide, and it's too late. And the out is affected at second base. So it's a single, all right, for Mayo in the center field. But he's thrown out by center fielder Andy Papko to second baseman Don Johnson. And Hoover, on the play, moves all the way around to third base. Coming in easily to score from second is Hub Walker. I think that's going to be all for Hank Wise. That was the third hit off him, and first run. He earned, let's see, that's three and two here for Detroit in the eighth inning. That gives them five, and the score stands 7-5. Three runs were gotten off Paso and two runs off Wise. So it's now a 7-5 ball game. Say, hey, this has been a knockdown, drag-out affair. Yes, Henry Wise is coming out of the ball game, and Ray Prim, I believe, is coming in. So Ray Prim is on the mound here, and Wise is out of there. Wise came on to pitch in this ball game in the seventh inning after Paso had pitched 6 2/3 innings. And he's pitched a third of this inning, so that means he's pitched two-thirds of an inning, counting that third of an inning he had pitched in the two-thirds and the third in this one. So he came on in the seventh inning, finished that out, and now has pitched a third here of the eighth inning. Prim here in the eighth inning will pitch first of all to center fielder Kramer. Now the southpaw, 39 years of age, is ready to make his first pitch. Two runs have come in here for Detroit here in the eighth inning, and the score is now 7-5 in favor of Chicago. Trim is trying to stem the tide. Down comes the first pitch. It's swung on the Kramer, and there's a fly ball dumped out into short left field. Here comes Peanuts Laurier and makes a nice running catch. He up quickly, throws into the plate, but it's too late. As Hoover had tagged up and came on in to score, but there was a nice running catch on the part of Peanuts Laurier. He dove for that ball and actually made a sparkling catch. Kramer's now batted in a run, and it's a 7-6 ball game. That guy Hoover tagged up and really streaked across that plate. Well, that's two outs for Detroit in the eighth inning, and they've scored three times. That run is off wide. Well, it's a 7-6 ball game, and it's Kitty by the door. This ball game can belong to anybody as Big Hank Greenberg comes wandering up to the plate. And Prim, the southpaw, gets ready and delivers him, and there's a fast one swung on and fouled back into the screen for strike one. Down in the bullpen for the Detroit Tigers, Jim Tobin and Hal Newhouser are both throwing. It's a 7-6 ball game in favor of the Chicago Cubs. Howie's ready, delivers. It's swung on. There's a long drive going deep out into left field. Larry's back against the wall, leans up against the wall, but it's a home run for Hank Greenberg. That ties it up. There, that guy Greenberg really leaned into an inside pitch and hit it. It was a high, deep drive back of left field. Larry backed up against the ivy, but he couldn't get it. That was way up into the stands for a home run. That ball was hit about 410 feet from home plate, and it's a tied-up ball game at 7-7, the sixth game of this, the 1945 World Series. Well, that was a hit and a runoff for him, and it's now his ball game to win or lose. Four runs have been scored by Detroit here in the eighth inning. And the batter is Cullenbine, hitting right-handed now against the left-handed offerings of southpaw Prim. Roy swings at it, and there's a bounding ball to shortstop. Hughes comes up with it nicely, throws to Cavaretta, and the side is retired. Well, let's see what the damage has been in the eighth inning for Detroit. Total of four runs on one, two, three hits. Nobody left. And there was one error and one home run by Hank Greenberg to tie up that ball game. So the score at the end of 7.5 innings of play is 7 for Detroit, 7 for Chicago. Remember, men, look sharp, feel sharp, be sharp. Use Gillette Blue Blades with the sharpest edges ever home. Down on the mound for the Detroit Tigers. Get this now, they want this ball game badly. Dizzy Trout has come in the pitch. Trout pitching now for Detroit. Stop pitching in the eighth inning. He's ready to pitch first of all to Stanley Hack of Chicago. And the first pitch is made, and it's under the knees of Hack for ball one. The club comes back with his next one. It's a curve high and on the outside. And that's ball two to Stanley Hack. Down in the bullpen for Detroit, just in case Dizzy Trout doesn't have his stuff today, Stubby Overmeyer and Hal Newhouse are both getting ready. A couple of southpaws. Hank Brody's warming up, too, down the Chicago bullpen. Trout delivers, and there's a fast curve under the knees of Hack for ball three. The first man up for Chicago here in the last half of the eighth inning with Dizzy Trout now pitching for Detroit. Has a count of 3-0. Trout pitches and gets it in for a strike. And the count now on Hack is 3-1. It's a 7-7 ball game. And it's really been a fight, believe me, tooth and nail. Trout delivers. And there's a low inside curve for ball four. And Hack has walked. So Trout comes in to pitch the eighth inning and promptly walks the very first man he faces. Batter up at the plate now for Chicago is Don Johnson. He has gone 0-3 for his work at the plate this afternoon. Clark throws, and there's a neatly placed bunt to the left of the mound. Clark picks it up, throws it over to first base to the second baseman, Eddie Mayo, covering, and Hack has been successfully sacrificed to second. Well, he's in scoring position now as Johnson lays his batting life down, going off from pitcher to the second baseman, covering it first. The batter now is Peanuts Lowry. He got a hit to deep shortstop back in the seventh inning. And that's the only hit he's had in three official times up this afternoon. Peanuts was walked in the fifth inning. So he's actually up there for his fifth at-bat, but only his fourth official one. Last of the eighth, and the score 7-7. There's a fastball hit back to second base. Eddie Mayo picks it up, plays it into Rudy York in plenty of time, and that's all for Lowry. But Hack moves over to third on the play. Phil Cavaretta comes walking up to the plate for Chicago. Cavaretta has had two base hits in three official times here in this game. In the fourth inning, he hit back through the middle for a single. And in the fifth inning, he knocked in a couple of runs with a single into right center field. The sun has come out very brilliantly here at Wrigley Field in Chicago. We've been playing this ball game, that is the greater portion of it, under gray and overcast skies, but now the sun has broken through. Phil Cavaretta, who has hammered in two runs today, has his opportunity of hammering in the third one and put his ball club out in front. The score stands 7-7. Two outs, last of the eighth inning. And Hack is on at third. Trout delivers, and there's a high, fast curve on the outside to a left-hand hitter for ball one. Cavaretta stands very deep in the plate and crouches over very severely. Trout delivers, Cavaretta swings, there's a fly ball hit out into left field. Hank Greenberg comes up to it, under it, and takes it for the out. And that's all for Chicago here in the eighth inning. So the potential tie-breaking run in Hack died at third base. No runs for Chicago, no hits. One man left, and there were no errors. So at the end of eight full innings of play, we've got a ball game that's all locked up good and tight like the barn. The back door of the barn, as a matter of fact. It's 7-7. And I think Hank Barroi is going to come out to do the pitching for the Chicago Cubs. But we're going to pause 10 seconds now for station identification. Remember, men, look sharp, feel sharp, be sharp. Use Gillette Blue Blades with the sharpest edges ever honed. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
This is WGM Chicago, serving the Middle West.
And Hank Barroi here at Wrigley Field in Chicago comes on to pitch the top of the ninth inning. And as he goes out there, he assumes a responsibility for this ball game as it's locked up at 7-7. Hank has won one ball game and lost one here in the World Series. But it's figured that he's probably the best chance that the Chicago Cubs have against the Detroit Tigers. As when Hank was in the American League, he was, well, pretty tough on all Tiger hitters. And he, in the ninth inning, is going to face Rudy York as the first batter. So Fordham Hank is on the mound. B-O-R-O-W-I. Hank Barroi pitching the ninth inning for Chicago.
Sends a fast one in there. It's hit by York down to third. Hack comes up with this one. Throws it across to first base to Phil Cavaretta, and that is all for Rudy York. Bouncing out from Hack to Cavaretta. Well, that's one away for Detroit in the top of the ninth inning. In about an hour is little Jimmy Outlaw. And regardless of which way the cat jumps, who takes this ball game, we're going to know this, that it's been a hard-fought game all the way. Now Barroi is ready. Throws to this right-handed hitter. And there's a fastball. Swung on and hit out into left field for a solid base hit for Jimmy Outlaw. Lowry takes it on the second skip and fires it into second base to Don Johnson. So Outlaw gets himself his first hit of the afternoon. A spiked single into left field. Barroi has given up his first hit. Batter coming up to the plate is Bob Swift, the catcher. Detroit Tigers been fighting back in the eighth inning and put across four runs to tie up the ball game at 7-7. And that's how it stands right now. Bob Swift hitting right-handed, standing just off the plate. Outlaw moves off at first base with one away. Barroi checks his runner. Goes down to the plate. There goes the runner. The ball is swung on and hit out in the center field for a base hit. Jimmy Outlaw doesn't stop at second. He digs on into third, and it's a hit and run. With the hitter Swift delivering a looping fly ball single into center field. And that puts Outlaw on at third. That is hit number two off the way. Now with one away, Detroit has runners at first and third. And there's a big conference down at the mound with Hank Barroi. This is a pretty tough spot for Hank to be in the top of the ninth inning.
The score stands at 7-7.
Batter coming up to the plate now is Jason Kelly. Batter coming up to be his first at bat.
Abreu is ready. Abreu's caught in the run down between third and home. And Hack has the ball waiting for him at third base as Mickey Livingston fired his back to third base when Jimmy Outlaw was trapped. So that's the second out here in the top of the ninth inning. It's a fielder's choice, all right.
And Trout takes first on the fielder's choice. Swift moves down to second on the fielder's choice. And Outlaw is out on a rundown between third and half.
That play goes to shortstop from the catcher and back to the third base. And the batter is Joe Hoover. Hoover was on in the eighth inning due to Stanley Hack's error. So he's 0 for 1, actually, as far as the batsman is concerned. He's a right-hand hitter, keeps his feet pretty close together. Stands very deep at the plate. Roy curves him, and medium-speed curveball is swung on. There's a high pop-up down by first base. Phil Cavaretta gets under it, and Phil's got it for the out. And that's all as the Tigers are turned back in the top of the ninth inning. So in the top of the ninth inning for Detroit, no runs, two hits, two men left, and there were no Chicago errors. And believe me, this ball game is really going down to the last, very last pitch. It's the last half of the ninth inning now at Wrigley Field in Chicago. Our ball game is locked up at 7-7. And this is the last call for the Chicago Cubs if they want to win this ball game in the regulation time of nine innings. And the first man up for Chicago is going to be Andy Pafko. And he'll be followed by Bill Nicholson and then by shortstop Roy Hughes, if that is the desire of manager Charlie Grimm. And out on the mound, and it's his ball game to win or lose, is Dizzy Trout, the fast fireballer of the Detroit Tigers. Behind the plate will be Bob Swift.
The chips are down here. It's the last of the ninth. Pafko swings, hits the ball just inside of third base there and out into the left field corner. Pafko is rounding first on his way to second. Greenberg's chasing the ball. He finally picks it up, and it's a standing up two-bagger. Andy Pafko.
Well, that's the first hit off Trout here in the ball game, and he gives it up in the last half of the ninth inning. And Andy Pafko really spiked it right between Jimmy Outlaw and third base and right out along the left field foul line. So with nobody out, the potential winning run for the Chicago Cubs is on at second base. And the man standing at the plate is Bill Nicholson, and he's hammered in more runs than anyone else in the World Series. He's hit in seven of them. And Nicholson's coming up to the plate right now. This afternoon, he has gone 0 for 3. He walked his last at-bat, which was in the seventh inning. Trout delivers him. And Nicholson takes a fast one through there for a strike. Nicholson waits. Trout checks his runner. Delivers to the plate. And there's an attempted bunt that's fouled off. First, that's strike two. And Charlie Grimm's strategy that time was, with nobody out, to move Pafko down to third, from whence he could be scored on a fly ball. No outs, last of the ninth. Pafko opened with a ringing double down the left field line, and he's on at second base. And Trout is in trouble here. Detroit is fighting with their backs to the wall in the last half of the ninth inning. It's a 7-7 ball game, and Chicago has their opportunity of winning it right now. This is the test, the acid test of any pitcher. The delivery to the plate is swung on and missed. Or strike three, and Nicholson is out of there. That's the first strikeout for Trout. And I don't think that the next man coming up, Livingston, is going to hit. I think Paul Gillespie will probably hit for him, yes? A left-hand hitter is coming up. Paul Gillespie to hit for Mickey Livingston. This hitter just points out to me, and he's absolutely right, that Detroit has now used 18 men here in this game. And the most players used in a World Series game by one club up until today was 18. The New York Yankees, the New York Giants of the National League in the sixth game of the 1936 World Series used 18 men. So that record has been tied this afternoon. Now Trout
is ready to pitch to Gillespie, who is in there hitting for Livingston. And the first pitch is a low curve for ball one. Gillespie hits left-handed. He'll probably remain in and catch if we have extra innings. Trout delivers, and there's the ball hit right back to the mound. Clark grabs it, looks at second, but he still goes to first. And Gillespie is out. Pasco holds right on at second. So Gillespie is thrown out by pitcher Dizzy Trout. I wonder if Hughes is going to come up and hit now, or whether we're going to have a pinch hitter for Hughes. Looks like we might have Heinz Becker. If Hughes will be lifted, then probably Marullo or Schuster will come in to play the 10th inning if extra innings is in order this afternoon. Becker is going to bat for Hughes. Heinz Becker hitting left-handed is Charlie Grimm's choice. And I think they're going to purposely pass Becker, who has had one hit and two tries as a pinch hitter here in the World Series. Yes, he's being intentionally walked. So Becker is being put on. Charlie Grimm goes over and talks to Hank Baroy, and I believe that Hank is going to be lifted. Yes, he's coming out of the ball game apparently. And we're going to have Cy Block coming in to run, I know. Seymour Block is going to run for Heinz Becker. So Block is running for Becker. Broy's going to hit for himself as Block runs here in the last of the ninth inning. Trout is ready, and he makes the first pitch and moves it through there on Broy for strike one. The two outs in the last of the ninth inning. Runners at first and second. Broy up there to hit for himself. Trout is ready. Stretches, pitches to the plate, and there's a ball hit out in the center field. Doc Kramer goes over to his left. He's got it, and it's going to be extra innings. For Chicago, here in the ninth inning, no runs, one hit, two men left, and there were no errors. So at the end of nine full innings of play, the score stands at 7-7. Well, remember, men, look sharp, feel sharp, and be sharp. Use Gillette Blue Blades with the sharpest edges ever honed. Now as we go into the top half of inning number 10, we're going to have some changes. We're going to have a new shortstop. And we're going to see who the new catcher is going to be. Apparently, Dewey Williams is going to do the catching for Chicago. Williams is catching in the 10th inning. And Marullo has gone to shortstop. So that is a change. Marullo at shortstop here in the 10th inning for Chicago. The first man that will come up will be Eddie Mayo. Mayo is coming up there. He's the second baseman of Detroit. And there's a fastball hit right into the glove of Stanley Hack at third. A line drive, and Hack knows now why they call third base the hot corner. He stayed right with it and grabbed it for the out. And that's one out here in the top of the 10th inning. And the batter now is Doc Kramer. Kramer moving in, hitting left-handed. Kramer's had one hit and five at-bats. Roy looks him over, takes a sign from Dewey Williams, delivers a medium-speed curveball. It's hit solidly into right field for a base hit. Bill Nicholson comes up to it and grabs it and fires it into second to Don Johnson. And it's a single for Kramer, hit into right. Got off Roy, it's hit number three. Hank Greenberg comes striding up to the plate. It was his home run in the eighth inning that tied up this ball game at 7-7. And the hopes of the Detroit fans ride right now on the broad shoulders of big Hank Greenberg as he steps up to the plate. He's hit a couple of home runs in this World Series. He hit one down at Briggs Stadium and hit one here. He's batted in five runs so far for the six runs for the Detroit Tigers. Roy curves him carefully under the knees for ball one. One out. Kramer on at first in the top half of the 10th inning. Greenberg swings, hits the ball down to short. Marullo up with it, plays it to Johnson for one out to throw to first. It's time for a double play. So for just when the Chicago Cubs needed that DP very badly. They came up with a second one here in this ball game and erased the Tiger chances in the top of the 10th inning. No runs, one hit for Detroit. Nobody left and there were no errors. And it's still a locked up ball game at 7-7 as we go into the last half of the 10th inning. And before the last half of the 10th inning, with Dizzy Trout on the mound for Detroit, let us pause 10 seconds for station identification. Remember, men, look sharp, feel sharp, be sharp. Use Gillette Blue Blades with the sharpest edges ever home. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
This is WGN Chicago serving the Middle West.
Right back here at Wrigley Field in Chicago. And the first man up in the 10th inning is going to be Stanley Hack. Dizzy Trout makes the first pitch to him, and it's a real fast curve for ball one. Hack has had two hits. Three official at-bats. He swings on this pitch and hits it into left field solidly for a base hit. And Hack is on here in the 10th inning. Stanley Hack hit a ground ball through the hole between short and third and out into left field. That off Trout, that is hit number two. So the Chicago Cubs have the potential winning run on at first base. And the batter coming up now is Don Johnson. Trout delivers and Johnson attempts to bunt, fouls it off to the right of the plate for strike one. So you can see that this one run is very important. They're trying to work Stanley Hack down to second. No outs here in the 10th inning. The score stands at 7-7. Stanley Hack has just opened the 10th inning for Chicago with a single, spiked very solidly into left field. He's on a first. Johnson tried to sacrifice him down to second. He fouled it off for a strike, so his count is 0-1. Trout ready, delivers, and there's another attempted sacrifice, but the ball is fouled off to the right of the plate this time for a strike two. That Trout's really ran back and thrown out high hard one right now. Hack steps off at first. Down comes the next pitch and it's swung on and missed for strike three. That's all for Johnson. And as far as strikeouts are concerned, for Dizzy Trout, that is his second one since he came in to pitch. He's the fifth of the Detroit pitchers. Came on to pitch the eighth inning. He pitched the eighth and the ninth, and he's now working the tenth. He's facing Peanuts Lowry right now, the little right-hand hitting left fielder. His curveball is a bit high and a bit outside to Peanuts for ball one. Hack again steps off first. One away, last of the tenth. Dizzy Trout doing the pitching for Detroit. Throws, and there's a ball hit down to second base. Mayo comes up nicely with it to throw to Hoover for one out. The throw on a double play. So Peanuts Lowry hits into a fast double play in the tenth inning. From the second baseman to the shortstop and over to the waiting mitt of Big Rudy York at first base. And Hack was caught in the middle of that fast double play. So in the 10th inning, no runs, one hit for Chicago, nobody left, and there were no Detroit errors. So at the end of 10 full innings of play, the score is 7-7. Well, I've just about lost my tonsils. Bill Slater, how do yours feel?
Well, it isn't my tonsils that are being affected by this ball game, Albert. I think it's my heart. This is a tremendous struggle, and of course, this is an epic in baseball. It's going to go down in baseball history. Everybody knows that because about everything in the world has happened in this particular ball game. And now out on the mound, completing his warm-up pitches as we move into the 11th inning, is the fellow who won this first game for the Chicago Cubs. And of course, he's being opposed by Dizzy Trout, who has also won a game for the Tigers. So a couple of the veterans and star pitchers of both teams are in there. Now we move into the top of the 11th inning, and as the Tigers bid to get that extra run, it will win this ball game for them, and the Cubs are eagerly anxious to turn them back. Cullen Bynum has done pretty fair by himself today. He has two hits out of four times up. Cullen Bynum, you know, was the goat earlier in the series. He wasn't hitting and wasn't looking too good in the field. But since the Tigers have moved into Wrigley Field here in Chicago, Big Roy has been in there, and he's hot. He's batting left-handed, of course, against right-handed pitching. He's a switch hitter. Roy delivers him. Cullenbein swings on it. There's a high foul down off third base. Over under to Stanley Hack right in front of the dugout. He takes it. So Cullenbein fouls out, and there's one out for Detroit now on the top of the 11th inning of this thrilling struggle here at Wrigley Field in Chicago. That brings up Rudy York. Today, Rudy has weighed in with a single and a double and five times up. Big right-handed batter from Cartersville, Georgia. Roy pitches him,
York takes a fast call strike. It was midway between the waist and knees. It nicked the outside corner. Steve O'Neill, with all the pressure on him, coaching down at third, shouts up to York something. York takes another one, and it was good. He stepped forward on that as if he were going to lean into it, then changed his mind, and the ball came whipping in and over. Two strikes on the big slugger. There's the windup. The pitch swung on. It's hit hard down to Hack at third. Stanley has it to throw over to first. The Cabaretta is in time, and York is out. Two outs for Detroit in the top of the 11th. Now here's little Jimmy Outlaw. Outlaw's had four hits in this series out of 23 times up. Steps up there, a right-handed batter. Barroy looking him over very carefully. He hit off Barroy back in inning number 9. Got a single to left. Now Barroy works. It's high to Jimmy for ball one. And it's growing colder as the sun hides away now behind the gray clouds. It's quite cold to start with. People have their coat collars turned up. There's the next pitch to Outlaw. Outlaw swings on it. There's a long one going to deep left field. Back goes Peanuts Lowry over to his right. He's under it now, and he takes it for the out. Well, that's all for Detroit in the top of the 11th inning. And here's how things stand at the end of 10 and a half innings of this ball game. Detroit has 7 runs. They have made 12 hits and committed no errors. Chicago has 7 runs. They have made 13 hits, and they have been guilty of 3 errors. So the Cubs come up to bat in the last half of the 11th inning. Remember, men, look sharp, feel sharp, be sharp. Use Gillette Blue Blades with the sharpest edges ever honed. And here's how they're going to come up in the last half of the 11th. There will be a lot of Chicago power there, for the leadoff hitter will be Phil Cabaretta, the champion batsman of the National League in this 1945 season. Then he'll be followed by Andy Papko, who has been in a hitting slump in the series but has come to life today. Then after him comes the ever-dangerous Bill Nicholson. So if Dizzy Trout can get by this one, she'll rock along. Cabaretta, left-handed hitter, has 2 hits out of 4 times up today. There he is in that crouch. Trout pitches him, and it's fouled off by Cabaretta for strike one. Ball bounces off the ground, rolls down off the screen, and little Jimmy Shalikas, the bat boy of the Cubs, catches it. And the outfield plays Cabaretta practically straight away, but deep. Trout works. It's low and inside, ball one. 1-1 on Cabaretta. And it's old Diz Trout, who lives down in Terre Haute, Indiana, who's doing the job. Cabaretta swings, misses. Strike two. 1-2. Trout, tall and blonde-like. Confident, powerful man, this Trout. He's ready. Pitches, hit by Cabaretta, right back to the mound. Trout has it, halfway runs it to first, and then tosses it underhand to York, and Cabaretta is out. There's Papko. Papko's been up 5 times today. He's had a single and a double. And it was his strong arm that cut down Eddie Mayo at the crucial point back there before the game had gone past regulation length. That was an arm that's been strengthened by Papko and his youth, milking cows. Papko swings on one, hits it foul. The hot hit ball is foul down the left field line. 1 strike on Papko, and the whole crowd rose up because the last time Papko was up there, he spiked a double right down that self-same left field line. Naturally, the Chicago fans hoped he was doing it again. Now Trout pitches him. Papko hits one. It's high up in the air. Back on the grass goes Mayo. It's twisting in the air. And Mayo takes it and holds it. And it was close. There was a tremendous thrill. That ball was hit high up in the air. Back on the grass behind first base. Going over under it was Mayo. And the ball was twisting up there in that very heavy wind. And Mayo had to make a lunge at the last moment, and he did, and it landed in his glove, and he almost fell down holding on to it. So Papko is out. That's 2 out for Chicago. Now here is Bill Nicholson. Nicholson hasn't hit today. Swings and misses. There's that tremendous swinging motion of this big, powerful guy from Maryland. And today, Nicholson has struck out twice. He's walked once, popped out the other two times. Now he swings on one. There's a high fly ball to left center field. Doc Kramer is over under it. Greenberg is right beside him, and Greenberg takes it right in front of Kramer, and he bumped into Kramer, but he didn't hurt him. So that's all to Chicago in the last half of the 11th inning. Nicholson flying out to Greenberg. And the score is still Chicago 7, Detroit 7, and here comes inning number 12. I'll bet you that everybody will go home and spend hour upon hour talking about this particular struggle today. Now on the mound again as we go into inning number 12 is Fordham Hank Baroli. Behind the plate is Dewey Williams. At first still is Caporetta. At second base is Don Johnson. At shortstop is Len Murillo, the East Boston boy. At third base, of course, is Stanley Hack. In left field is Peanuts Lowry. In center field is Andy Papko. And in right field is Bill Nicholson. And the first batter for Detroit here in the top of the 12th inning will be the catcher, Bob Swift. Swift, the fellow who lives in Salina, Kansas, and is known, as we have remarked, as the best waffle maker in the big leagues. Steps up here. Bob's a husky fella. Big six-footer with plenty of heft on that powerful frame of his, and he bats right-handed, and he wears a great big number one on his back. And number one is just exactly the number of runs that both of these teams want right now in the 7-7 tie going into inning number 12. Now Baroli is ready to go to Swift. There's that windup. Here it comes. Swift takes a fast call strike. That ball had Baroli steam on it. It whipped the outside corner just above the knees. Hank working again. Swift taking again. Strike two. The same pitch. Now the shortstop, Len Murillo, comes in to pick something up off of the infield there and stick it in his pocket. He wants no pebbles or anything there to obstruct the play on the ball if it comes his way. Two strikes on Swift. Pitcher swung on. There's a high fly ball going into left field. Lowry is quickly to his right over near the line, and Lowry is under it just in fair territory down the left field line. So that's all for Swift. One away for Detroit. Dizzy Trout is scheduled to hit next, and I imagine old Diz will be coming up to hit for himself because he can hit. Yep, here he comes. A big hand for Dizzy Trout. That Dizzy is a character. Right at this particular moment, he's got his right pants leg hitched up above his right knee, and his left one is hanging way down. That's old Diz for you, batting right-handed, stepping in there. Baroli pitches him low into the dirt. Ball one on Trout. Trout, his last time up in the ninth inning, hit one down to the infield, got on at first on the fielder's choice, but that was when Jimmy Outlaw got caught between third and home on what looked like a pretty good Detroit rally. Trout swings on that one. There's a high foul up. The catcher is going over under it. Dewey Williams over near the dugout of the Tigers takes it for the out. So Trout fouls out, and that's two out. The top of the Detroit batting order is scheduled to come up now. That brings up Joe Hoover. Hoover hasn't appeared much in this particular series. Joe's a six-footer, weighs 175 pounds, comes from Brawley, California, 29-year-old. That's right-handed. It's his third time up. He got on once by an error and popped out to the first baseman the other time. Baroli pitches him. It's good. Hank is warmed to his task now, and he's pitching beautiful baseball. Hoover standing there almost straight up, crowding the plate a little. Roy moves one high. Went right across in front of his nose. One ball, one strike on Hoover. Hoover and Skeeter Webb have been off and on the shortstop for the Tigers this whole year. Goes the pitch. A little too high again. It's ball two. Two and one on Joe Hoover. On deck. If he gets a chance, is Eddie Mayo. Now absolute quiet settles over Wrigley Field. Spirelli gets ready to work. Here it comes. Hoover swings on it, hits it on the ground to the left of Perillo, and it goes through into the outfield for a hit. It's a single for Hoover, and he's on. And there's the tie-breaking run at first now. The Tigers can bring it in. Two are out.
That's hit number four off Fordham Hank Baroli since he came in here in inning number nine. That's hit number 13 for the Tigers. They don't consider that unlucky. And here's Eddie Mayo up there.
Mayo, as we've told you, has gotten four of his five hits in this series off Hank Baroli, whom he faces right now. Mayo bats left-handed. Here's the pitch to Mayo. And Hoover is breaking for second. There's the throw down, and Hoover is out, trying to steal second. That was a very nice throw by Dewey Williams. It was taken by Len Murillo, slapped on Hoover, who came sliding in. I think Murillo got spiked on his left hand. There's the trainer, Andy Lockshaw, running out there. Of course, that closed out the inning as far as the Tigers were concerned. No runs for them, one hit, no base runners left on. We're no errors, and now we're headed for the last half of inning number 12. And here's the way it all adds up at this point in this tremendous ball game out here at Wrigley Field. Detroit, 7 runs, 13 hits, no errors. Chicago, 7 runs, 13 hits, 3 errors. We're waiting for the last half of the 12th inning. The hitters there will be Williams, the catcher, if he's set up. And he'll be followed by Murillo if he's set up. And then Barbaroi, depending on how things go. Well, while we're getting ready for them, here's my message to you. Remember, men, look sharp, feel sharp, be sharp. Use Gillette Blue Blades with the sharpest edges ever honed. And Dewey Williams will come up to hit. Williams has been up once before in this series, came up as a pinch hitter, went 0 for 1. So this is his second time at bat in the series. Billy Schuster, utility shortstop, is warming up down the bullpen, so I imagine Murillo may not go out to play. Now Diz Trout delivers one to Dewey Williams. It's up high. Williams, a right-handed batter, swings on one, hits it back past Trout. It's fielded by Mayo. The throw to first is in time. Nice work by Mayo. Williams is out. Second to first. That's one away in the last of the 12th. And this terrifically tense, locked struggle grinds on. Let's see who's coming up to bat here now. I do not believe it's going to be Morello, but I'm not sure. That looks like Frank Sicori. It's Sicori, all right. Sicori, who has been up 3 times as a pinch hitter, has gotten one hit out of 3 times up, is coming up here to hit now in the last of the 12th. There's nobody on, and one away. Corey's wife is seated down here in the stands, just off to the right of us. Corey's a big guy, stands over 6 feet, weighs 200 pounds, and he hails from Port Huron, Michigan. Right-handed batter, and Trout gets ready to pitch to him. Swings on that one, slaps it out into center field. It's falling in for a hit. Kramer is coming up to it, and Sicori is on at first with the second hit of the series. I think Billy Schuster is going to run for Sicori. Yep. Schuster, who's not quite so big, a little bit faster on his feet, is going to run for Sicori. And that, of course, is an important run because that's potentially the game-winning run if the Cubs can bring it in. Sicori, incidentally, right now is batting at an even 500 in this series. Pretty good for a pinch hitter. And the batter coming to the plate is going to be Hank Roy. Roy hits very well in the clutches. Last year in the All-Star game, bashed one out for the American League. He chokes up the bunt, and the bunt rolls foul. So the strategy there, apparently, was to tell Mr. Roy to get Schuster running for Sicori down to second. That would make it two out and put all the pressure on Stan Hack, who's pretty hot today. Corey's blow a moment ago was just the third hit that Dizzy Trout has given up since he came in here in the eighth inning. Now old Diz stretches, goes to plate, and another attempt to bunt is fouled off. But Trout's making it mighty hard for Barroy to bunt. And Jolly Charlie Grimm down there at third, the old banjo player, one of the swellest guys that ever walked, is just about to tear his big self apart. Now he spreads his arms wide and looks up at the heavens. Now he cups his hands and shouts at Barroy. And the infield is pulled back, of course. There are 2 strikes on Barroy. Here's the pitch. Barroy swings away and strikes out. That's 2 out. And here comes Stanley Camfield Hack. That's 3 strikeouts for Mr. Trout. Now let's take a look at what Hack has done today. Twice Hack has worked the pitcher for a walk.
And three times out of the other four times up, he has gotten singles. He's hit twice to center field, and he's hit once to left field. Left-handed batter who pulls him, who hits him towards the left side of the outfield. There's a call strike that Trout puts in on him. Fast one just above the knees and on the inside corner. There's a tremendous hole between center and right field. Schuster has a long lead off first. Trout delivers the plate. Schuster goes back to first, and that is strike two on Mr. Hack. Hack was backing away from it, but it nipped the inside corner on him, and Charlie Grimm comes charging in from third, shouting like a bull. Now Charlie goes back into the box, takes off his hat. Two strikes is the count on Hack. Two out. Game-winning run is at first. Here's the pitch. Outside. Ball one. One and two on Stanley Camfield Hack. One of the greatest third basemen in the history of baseball. 36 years old. Knows a lot of ball. There's the throw over to first, and Schuster has to dive in on his stomach. He was traveling right in there on the pit of his stomach, sliding and reaching for that bag. Trout's throw over to York was fast. Here's the pitch to Hack. It's fouled off as Schuster was breaking for second. Hack busted his bat on that. Count on him is one ball, two strikes, and Hack goes trotting over to the Cub dugout, which is just opposite third base. Got a new bat, and he's going to pick out the one that he himself personally selects. Little Jimmy Shalikas, the bat boy for the Cubs, finds one for him. Hack looks at it, says it's all right. Now he's beating the handle end of it on the ground just to make sure that it rings true. Because I doubt if Hack has ever been up to bat in a more important spot than this one right here. Billy Schuster leading down off first there. He's a Buffalo boy, born, bred, and lives there. And Hack up here with the count one ball and two strikes on him and two out. Now Schuster's breaking. Hack hits it. It's a clean hit out into left field. And it bounces over Greenberg's head and is rolling toward the wall. And Schuster's rounding third. And Schuster comes in to score and the Cubs win. They'll be talking about that one. Schuster was on at first. He broke with the pitch. The ball was hit by Hack for Hack's fourth hit of the afternoon. It went out into left field. It looked as if it were going to be easy for Hank Greenberg to field it on the first hop. It hit some kind of an obstruction there. Bounced high over the head of Greenberg, rolled to the wall. And Greenberg had no chance to run back to the wall and pick that up and get it in before Schuster had scored. I believe he will be officially credited with a double, but he bats in the winning run, and the Cubs tie up the series. On as an unusual a thing as you will ever see in the World Series or any other ball game, and it came in the last half of the 12th inning. Well, now, here comes Bill Corum. Chicago wins. The score is 8-7, everyone. And fighting his way through here and looking not too cold comes Bill Corum. Here is Bill Corum. Bill, what do you think?
Well, Bill, I've seen everything now, and I hope you boys kept your hotel room. This was a finish to make your heart pound and your pulses pump. Very much like the one down in Washington in 1924 when the Senators won their World Championship from the Giants. And Muddy Ruth hit, I believe it was, bounced over Lindstrom's head for the winning run for old Sir Walter Johnson in the 12th inning. Of course, Hack, who lashed that ball out into left field that bounced over Greenberg's head, had been hitting like a wild man all afternoon, as he has all the way through the series. Old Stanislaus, one of the great ball players of the National League, and when Billy Schuster came romping home, this great crowd here in Chicago went wild. He used almost as many pitchers today and more as many warmed up as there were folks in the stands. And there were 41,708 here who had paid $204,531 to bring the total up to $1,388,277, a new series record. The previous mark was $1,322,328, set in a seven-game series between the Tigers and the Cincinnati Reds. But there were all kinds of records broken here this afternoon, and almost everything you could see in a ball game. Of course, this great Chicago crowd is going back home happy now, and on Wednesday, we'll probably see another such game, probably not as thrilling. It could hardly be but another great ball game to find out who's finally going to be the champion in 1945. It'll come down, I suppose. I haven't had a chance, of course, to talk to Charlie Grimm, to all old Oom Paul Derringer, to start for him. It doesn't look to me as if he's got anybody else. And the Tigers remember Oom Paul very well because he was the fella who down in Cincinnati beat Bobo Newsom in the series down there in 1940 in the last seventh and deciding game. Not a I told you so fella, but you might remember that the first time I got on this radio at the beginning of this series, I said it looked to me like these were two teams who might fight it out down to a seventh game and we might see every one of them played as we will now. They're just like that. Very little to choose between them. The Tigers have Greenberg, a tower of strength at the bat for all that he can't run very well now. And, of course, it was Hank who, like Babe Ruth, the old guy who stood alone, always came up when the spotlight was brightest, who slashed that home run, his second of the series, into the left field seats to keep the Tigers in the ball game and keep the Cubs from winning in a regulation nine inning. You'll seldom see two pitchers, one who won on Saturday and one who lost yesterday on Sunday, coming back to finish up a ball game and deciding it between them. And, of course, this time it was Trout who had to accept the role of the vanquished, and Hank Baroy, the fellow who came to the Cubs from the Yankees, who reversed what happened to him yesterday and came out the winning pitcher here in this sensational ball game in which the Cubs won 8-7. And my totals are 8 runs, 15 hits, 3 left, 3 errors and 11 left for the Cubs. Detroit, 7 runs, 13 hits, 1 left, and 12. 14 hits, I guess it is, for the Cubs. Well, anyhow, I got so much on my scorecard that nobody could read it, and least of all I. There's all kinds of figures and marks here because I got a lot of notes. It's really 8-15-3 and 7-13-2. Thank you, Al Helfer. I was changing the math so fast that I had it wrong. Now, there was an error charged on Greenberg and a single for Hack on that last play. We didn't have time to give it to you, but that's the way the official scorers called it. They've been very generous about errors previous to this, but on that one, which didn't look to me, of course, I have nothing to do any more than a spectator. I have no official capacity in calling them, but that ball looked as if it hit something and took a hop, and Greenberg or nobody else could have got it, as if there might have been a stone or something out there in the field. Anyhow, it doesn't matter. The Cubs won in thrilling fashion, kept themselves in the game, fought brilliantly, and old man Faso should receive a great nod of acknowledgement here because of his pitching, even after Jimmy Outlaw had torn the nail off the middle finger of his pitching hand. He was still in there, a good pitcher, and not, of course, the great one that he was when he pitched that one-hit game up there in Detroit, but a fellow who kept the Tigers held in check, and Greenberg and Big York and Cullenbine and all those heavy swingers, too, until the Cubs could finally come on and win a game that they might easily have won in the regulation nine inning. The Tigers had, in the eighth inning, their usual big four-run cluster, but this time it didn't see them through. It wasn't quite enough because this afternoon, chilly as it was, beautiful, though, with sunshine at the finish, the Cubs were not to be denied, and they'll be in there fighting at the finish. No doubt Newhouser will pitch for Detroit, and we all know what a great pitcher he is, probably the best in the game today, and the old man Derringer will undoubtedly oppose him, I feel sure, in that seventh and deciding game on Wednesday. Well, fans, what a series this is turning out to be. Now, remember, there will be no game tomorrow, but we'll be back on the air Wednesday afternoon sharp at 1:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to report the seventh game of the 1945 World Series. So until Wednesday afternoon, this is Bill Coram with Al Helfer and Bill Slater saying smooth sailing, smooth shaving, and good afternoon for the Gillette Safety Razor Company. Remember, men, look sharp, feel sharp, be sharp. Use Gillette Blue Blades with the sharpest edges ever honed.